Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, welcome back to another edition of Leaving the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, and the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. We took Thanksgiving off, so we got a lot of stuff here on Leaving the Ring to talk about, especially with Robert the Ghost Guerrero and Andre Berto. Being told right now by Gabriel is going to be on in about 5 minutes. He's running a little late. Anyways, we didn't have a chance to talk about that, Definitely, we didn't have a chance to give our prediction or breakdown about that fight, but we definitely had a chance to speak to both men before the fight had took place this past weekend, and both of them sound very confident and determined. But as usual, it could only be one that walks away with the arm raised up in the air, and it was Robert the Ghost Guerrero, who did an impressive, outstanding performance against Andre Berto. A lot of mixed feelings, though. Mixed feelings of what I'm hearing and what I've received in our Leaving the Ring Gmail. Some folks were saying, hey, Berto came off a long layoff. Some guys are saying Berto is just not that good. Some guys saying this is what happens when you fight a bunch of ESPN fighters, and when you finally step up, you're gonna lose to somebody that's just that much better. But at the same time, I hear the critics, and I hear what they're saying and stuff, but at the same time, what I like to point out is that he was jumping up two weight classes, and he was being heavily criticized before for not facing a big puncher, but not as quick, Marcos Maidana. And he gets in there with a true 147-pounder, a name that is recognizable to the fight fans, whether you're hardcore or your mainstream. Well, I want to say mainstream. Not all mainstream knew about Andre Berto, but speed-wise, punching power-wise, reminded us of Melvick Taylor. We know that he can take a hit. We know that he's determined to get back up after being dropped or hurt. So we knew that he was in for a long night. What a guy that wasn't going to go anywhere. For a guy that's a true welterweight and that was really trying to get himself back on his feet and show the world that the Victor Ortiz was just a minor speed bump. So he gets in with a guy that closely has the heart and determination as himself. Again. And, I did point out with a few folks, some on Twitter, some on email, on Gmail, on Leaving the Ring, was that it may be Berto may have some thoughts or maybe reserve himself of trying to lose a little bit of that muscle and move down back down in weight. He never banquet at 140, but let's put the thought here. He had two guys jump up in weight and beat him. Not just beat him, but beat him convincingly. And they were both back and forth wars. So my question is where does Berto stand as a welterweight? What does he do? Should he retire? Should he just hang up the gloves and realize, you know what? When I step up in competition, I'm going to fall a little short. Or does he just stay as the gatekeeper? Is he the guy that determines whether or not you're ready and prepared to move forward and face the best in the league? Because we know that Robert the Ghost Guerrero, the reason why he can campaign as a welterweight, the reason why he decided to move up in weight is because he's after the big money fight, which is with Floyd Pretty Boy Money Mayweather. And about a year ago, a lot of us were saying that he was crazy. He's nuts. This guy's crazy to think that he could jump up in weight, not able to face somebody with speed and power and at a bigger weight division, that he should have right or claim just because he's got championship bouts in lower weight divisions and he's fought the best in lower weight division, that he should have claim to facing Money Mayweather. But now he's making his case. I mean, this guy's really putting a fork into it. He's really showing that he ain't going to go anywhere. And being able to take a punch from a true 147-pound Andre Berto and walk through it, his head did swivel. Let's admit that there. His head did swivel from those uppercuts. But he was still able to maintain himself and keep himself grounded. There's some question whether or not his stamina is still in question. His mouth was a little open. He did look a little fatigued in those championship rounds. What would happen if Pretty Boy Floyd dragged him into those late rounds? I know some folks were saying, well, those uppercuts were landing. If Berto can land them like that, well, imagine what Floyd Mayweather can do. I got to take that a little back, though. We thought the same with Miguel Cotto. We thought that Floyd was going to be too fast, too precise, and able to land some hellacious shots that he was going to get a mid or late stoppage. Instead, we saw Miguel Cotto with a game plan. A shop-worn Miguel Cotto able to land some body shots and show some movement and was able to land some big shots on Floyd and had him a bit confused here and there. Kept him reserved. Kept him looking and really reserving himself and making sure he wasn't over-committing himself where he can get caught with something silly.
Hard work, dedication.
Hard work, dedication. Absolutely.
How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good, man. I'm just breaking down this Berto and Floyd Mayweather, and I'm going back with some folks. You know, I got quite a few emails about the case, the heavy case now for Guerrero getting at Floyd Mayweather, but people saying if Berto can land those uppercuts, you imagine what Floyd would do. It would be an easy night for him. And I'm just going back. This is what we thought with Miguel Cotto, and what did we end up seeing? It wasn't another day in the office.
No. You know what? Yeah, he could land those. You know what it would be? Imagine what Floyd would be is the question. The exact same thing. He would be throwing one uppercut at a time, maybe two, maybe three, but he'd be taking shots in return, just like he did in the Cotto fight. I mean, Cotto is a guy that's always been open for the uppercut. We knew that going in. He knew he was open for the straight right down the pipe. Cotto adjusted and took those things away. I think it's hard to look at a guy like Floyd and say that Robert Guerrero is going to prepare for him exactly the way he prepared for Andre Berto. Two completely different styles, although Berto tried to roll out the shoulder roll. It was like a destitute man's shoulder roll. It's just not the same thing. You cannot compare them. And I don't think Robert would make the mistake, like fans are, of comparing them and saying, you know, if he looked at his fight with Berto, he'll probably find mistakes. And he'll probably say, you know what, I can't do this against Floyd. I can't do that against Floyd. But, you know, there's a lot of things that he can do. I think he's, as much as anybody right now, has kind of earned that shot. You know, he called his shot. We bitched at him. We moaned at him. We said, hey, wait a minute. You haven't really earned it. You haven't proven yourself at the higher weights. But, you know, I'm coming across right now and just saying he beat Selkirk Aydin, a guy that Berto did not want to fight. And then he beat Berto, a two-time title holder. This is a guy that defended his belt, like, what, seven times? I think it's as good as it gets. You know, I mean, that's in this day and age, who else do you need him to beat Devin Alexander in order to prove that, you know, he could do something with Floyd? I don't think so. You know, he didn't beat Berto the way – I think he actually beat Berto more decisively than Victor Ortiz, who beat Berto's ass and knocked him down but did not dominate for the entire fight. I thought Guerrero, as much as people think it was – a tight fight or really exciting. And I just thought watching ringside, not a great seat. I thought that Guerrero dominated from start to finish. I mean, he had some moments. He had a moment in the ninth where he got caught with an uppercut and kind of rocked back. But that was the only time I saw him kind of bend. So, I see it. It's a younger version of what Cotto did to Mayweather. I absolutely see it.
I do too. You know, sitting there and watching that, and you're absolutely right, with that ninth round uppercut, it was a clean, nice, big shot.
It was a ninth, right?
It was perfectly timed, and it went right under between those gloves, and it caught Guerrero, which he was doing was putting his weight to keep Berto on those ropes so that he could work that body. But at the same time, I thought in that ninth and tenth round, going on from there, I saw a little bit of a fatigue Guerrero. You know,
sure.
Because, you know, so much, he was putting so much weight, he was putting so much behind his punches, and he made sure he dictated every second of those minutes to those 3 minutes ending of each round. that it took a lot. And I was really surprised, you know, Gabriel, I don't know about yourself, but I was majorly surprised to see how much bigger and how determined he was to manhandle the stockier, more of a football frame Andre Berto.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, sorry, it's in the world of investigative writing, you just get emails and texts and calls. You know, I thought Berto, you know, this was a thing. I remember writing it. I was pretty active that night on Twitter, talking about the fight. And I remember Berto, you know, when he took his robe off and everything, kind of got a look at him in the ring. He had no legs, skinny legs. And normally he's been a very top-heavy guy. But to me, when a guy's been out of weight too long, it reminded me of seeing Victor Ortiz's open workout when he was facing Lamont Peterson, which I believe is the last stop at 140. You could just see the legs were not quite there anymore, and that he needed to move up, that his body had found the place to take from, and it was the legs. And Berto just never had his legs under. I mean, I don't know if, how much, you know, it wasn't as evident on TV. I mean, you could see him throwing them around, but like ringside, it was constant. His back leg was not being, it wasn't like Berto was kicking his leg up. He was being thrown around by Guerrero, which you looked at his legs, they built him up to 47 the right way, built him from the legs up. And you could tell he wasn't a blown up dude. He didn't look like he had love handles. He's fighting at like his best weight and his strongest weight. It's really interesting to see how Guerrero's body has changed, you know, and I'm not intimating anything. I'm not, you know, I'm not saying anything like that, because he actually asked for VADA testing. He wanted the best. They gave him USADA instead. So anybody that's sitting there asking for your VADA testing, and Berto wanted it too. That's a guy that's trying to be clean, is basically declaring, I'm clean, give me the best testing, because these guys catch people, unlike USADA, who's now trying to, I don't know, smooth over the Morales situation by offering a ban. I don't know if you saw that. It just broke on Lance Pugmire's feed on Twitter. USADA is now saying, hey, by the way, Eric Morales, your B sample tested positive for clenbuterol, and we're going to, you know, you have till December 7th to respond. We're going to suspend you for 2 years unless you appeal. My question is, which B sample are you guys talking about, the first one or the second one? And where were you guys before the fight? All of a sudden, it's worth a 2-year ban, but it was all good to go into the fight? And I thought, didn't New York say it wasn't that big of a deal, according to USADA? Yeah, there's a lot of things. I don't know if you read my piece today, but I'm actually starting to find out more information about this Broner DeMarco, why the test did not happen. There's now some question as to why the samples were sent to Utah, where they're normally sent to the UCLA medical lab. This is kind of something new.
That is something new. Kind of weird, too.
I think this is just my thinking out loud. I don't know. I don't want to make too much importance of myself in this, but I've been reporting on it, so it's strange. Think back to, remember when everybody assumed that I was being informed by VADA, either Margaret or Victor Conte, Margaret Goodman, who runs it and who I've never met in person, and Victor were feeding me information. That was their puppet. Everybody got real freaking quiet when I broke Rafael Cavalcante, the chief sparring partner and close friend of Anderson Silva in the MMA, tested positive. And then I broke Tarver. What's the through line of all those? All of those tests, UCLA Medical Lab. Suddenly USADA is going to Utah. Is there a connection? Who can say? I don't know. We'll see. I just think it's interesting. The more pressure we put, you know, if you read my piece today about it's Broner DeMarco and the USADA contracted USADA testing that didn't happen. There's a lot of things going on here, man. I don't know if they actually made a bad situation worse by getting into the testing business, but I'll be doing an expose pretty soon on the contracts themselves. I think people will be very interested to see the different clauses. I know I was. So,
absolutely.
I think we're a few minutes from Freddie Roach. Let me check in on email and make sure that we are all good to go.
Go ahead, and fight fans, if you want to call in and talk some boxing, talk about this past weekend fights, you certainly can. Let me give out the number right now, 347-215-7598. We got Freddie Roach coming on in a short bit, and then we're going to have Adrian Broner's trainer come on and speak to us here on Leaving in the Ring Radio. Right now we're talking about Robert the Ghost Guerrero and Andre Berto this past weekend for the Thanksgiving weekend, a sensational fight between those two guys. Robert now campaigning as a welterweight. Second fight in that division against Andre Berto, who had just came off of a suspension and a loss from Victor Ortiz. He was trying to redeem it, but it didn't go through. We all know why. And he ended up getting the Northern California Mexican-American, I'd rather say a Chicano fighter, Robert the Ghost Guerrero. And what a game plan. You know, I follow Robert for a very long time, and he's represented the Bay very well. And it's just good to see him get, you know, which he used to tell me, which was, you know, what's funny is back when he was fighting the ladder divisions for 126, he always used to tell me this, him and his dad and his brother, Ruben Jr., always say, I'm a natural 147, and I just trim my body down this much to fight, to have advantages. And, you know, he really wanted to make himself be great. He wanted to test himself. And last, like the last time he came back on, isn't that what fighters are supposed to do, is test themselves and see whether or not they can really reach that greatness in themselves and in the division and in the sport. And that's what fight fans want to see, the best of the best fighting. And he certainly, certainly, if you weren't a fan of Robert the Ghost Guerrero, you're going to be, you know, you're now starting to be a fan of him, because you're seeing that the guy does come to fight. From all the, you know, making fun of in the past, from calling him a quitter, from saying you're crazy for jumping up in weight, you're not ready, you can't do it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of us have to eat some crow on that and now say, you know what, I'm interested in seeing what this guy now can do since he's passed his big test as a welterweight by facing Andre Berto.
Apparently they're in queue.
Who's in queue? Oh, okay. Let me patch in Freddie Rose. Freddie, are you there, brother?
I'll put him on right now. Freddie.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Hey, Gabe.
Hey, Freddie. How you doing? Thanks for taking the time to speak to us.
Freddie, yeah, thank you for coming on. I know how busy and especially crazy coming closer to the fight is. There's been a lot of stuff been thrown out and kind of confusing, and I want to get to the fight, definitely, but I wanted to clarify some of this stuff. You had talked about Alex, or rather your feelings about Memo Heredia, and that you had asked for testing. Bob Arum says that's not true. Was it a formal request, or was it something that you had just kind of privately wanted and it just didn't pan out? Could you clarify that?
I asked Ariza, Manny, and Michael Collins. Michael Collins told me Arum won't go for it, so I dropped it.
Oh, I see. It basically, yeah, it wasn't like you threw it down to Marquez and Marquez said no. It just kind of died on the vine along the way.
Yeah, never get that far.
Can you clarify Alex Ariza's situation? I understand he's just basically stretching Manny and not actually doing his normal stuff with him anymore.
Yeah, you know, Manny asked me if he could run the hill because Alex wanted to take him to the track, and they went to the track one day, and Manny's back got sore. So Manny asked me if he could run the hills like he normally does, and I told him yes, and Manny, he knows how to get in shape, so Alex does stretch him every day, and that's his only job at this point.
Are you guys just kind of playing out the string with him, in a sense?
Well, you know, the thing is, I don't think he's necessary anymore, but Manny likes him, so we're stuck. So I thought he was going with Robert Garcia for a while, but then I heard Bob Arum pull the plug on that one.
Wow. Yeah, I heard that same thing. I was the one that reported that it actually wasn't going through. It's kind of funny how everybody rushed to do an interview with him and get one-on-ones, and as soon as I reported it wasn't true, everybody went kind of silent. Alex seems to like to talk, but then not clarify. But, Dave, go ahead.
You know, the first fight was obviously, it was 8 years or something like that. It took 8 years for the second one to happen, and then this one happened, and now it's a year. Freddie, do you feel that was enough time to sit back and really try to figure out the puzzle of Marquez?
Well, you know, I'm trying to figure out the puzzle of Marquez the last three fights. And,
right.
And our game plan worked somewhat, but not really as good as I wanted to. So I just told Manny, let's just get in the best shape you can, fight this guy hard, and fight 3 minutes of every round. And I think we press this guy, we'll knock him out. So that's where we're at right now. So I got Manny in the best shape I could. I'm not worried about the footwork with the southpaw, because that hasn't worked for us at all. And it just, I got Manny being more aggressive and backing the guys up. And when I watch the tapes, that's when he's always doing when he's at his best against Marquez, when he's backing him up with aggressiveness. So that's what we're going to try to do in this fight.
So it sounds to me that it's more or less, you know what, I'm done trying to have my fighter box him. He does better when he just kind of goes for broke. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, not for broke, just fights him. Fights him hard, yeah. You know, the thing is, Manny's always done well when he's aggressive with him. He's put him down 4 times being aggressive, and that's what I want more of.
Manny talked about that. We talked about that yesterday at the media day. I ended up getting out of there a little earlier than I wanted to. But Manny talked about that he's kind of trying to return to his roots and to be more aggressive and also more active, moving his head more angles. Is that going to require him to expend more energy, or is it kind of just remembering the things he used to do?
Well, you know, the thing is, I'll have to spend a little more energy than he has in his last couple of fights, but that's what we need to do. He needs to fight 3 minutes in every round. And he's very capable of that. He just, but the thing is, he's just got in the habit of just taking it easy on these guys and being compassionate with them, and, you know, hurting these guys but not trying to finish them. So I want Manny to be the old Manny Pacquiao that when he hurts somebody, he goes to the kill.
And I've noticed that he actually said, "I'm not talking about politics or religion this fight. We're talking about the fight." Like, he seems. His body reflects it. He seems to be in much better shape. Were you? I know it took him a while to get to camp, a couple weeks late, but was that just him conditioning and showing up? Were you pleased when he showed up with what you saw?
Yeah, I was very pleased. The first day we did 12 rounds in the mitts. If he can do 12 rounds in the mitts, he's in shape. And he told me he's in great shape, and that's why he wanted to spend that time there. So he came in good shape. We had 6 weeks here. And that's normal when we started sparring. So we started sparring right away. And so Frankie Gomez has been helping us out a lot. And Sue Croft from Russia and the two Roman brothers. So we've had some really good sparring. We've had 4 knockdowns in sparring with Manny. And that's the first time we've had knockdowns since the Cotto fight. And he comes back to the old Manny Pacquiao.
What do you think is the more crucial thing in this fight here alone? Making sure Manny's in his best shape, or just trying to find that right punch to land to change it all the way around? I mean, to bring it back to that first fight. What do you think, Freddie?
Well, being in shape and fighting 3 minutes of every round, I think, is the key. And the thing is, if he can fight 3 minutes of every round, I don't think Marquez can with all that muscle he's put on, you know, all the weightlifting he's doing and so forth. He's very big and tight, and it's going to take a lot of energy for him to throw punches, a lot more energy than usual. And I think he'll fade in the fight, and I think we'll be strong towards the end.
Let me ask you one last thing about Alex. And I understand, like, I don't want to get sued, you don't want to get sued, so I'll be delicate with the question, but I talked to Bob yesterday, and I asked Manny this too, who had no comment. I said, do you guys worry about putting your fighter in with somebody who's the client of Memo Heredia, who you know his past, he's famous for, you know, undetectable drugs? And Bob told me, I'm not worried because Alex said that he works with him or has worked with him, and he gave him a clean bill of health. Does that kind of freak you out that you're the guy that's kind of working with your guy or has is basically giving a clean bill of health to someone with Heredia's past? Does that bother you at all?
I'm a little bit leery about that, and that's why the first when I wanted to do the drug test with Manny, the first person I asked was Alex Ariza, because The thing is, you don't know what these strength coaches are giving these fighters. And, you know, if we didn't have strength coaches, we wouldn't have drugs in boxing because they're the ones who brought it here. Because the boxing crowd doesn't know that much about it. The strength coaches are the ones that, like, you know, of course I said something about kiss his ass, that means clean. And then Victor Conte jumps right on the bandwagon defending his buddy, you know. But these guys have done this in the past, and the thing is, again, I don't want to get sued, so I got to be careful how we say this. But you know what? The strength coaches are the one who brought drugs to boxing.
And it's a thing. You know, I'll clarify, though. Victor has been – he was actually the one that notified me and Steve Kim about Memo Heredia's real name because he's walking around with Angel Hernandez. And he's been really vocal. He doesn't think this is a good idea that this guy's in the sport. I'm actually working on a piece about Memo that I'm sure you'll get a chance to see.
But Victor defended him yesterday. Victor defended him. Heredia? He just sounds like me. So.
I'll have to check with Victor. If we talked at length about Heredia, I'll have to see about his comments. Yeah, because he – I don't know. I don't want to take up all your time talking about
it. I said it doesn't look natural that a guy gets that big that quick, but you know he might be weightlifting a lot, so maybe that's the key.
Yeah, we'll see.
Freddie, does it concern you though? Even with Alex Ariza of the past of him working with your fighters in the past, I mean, did that make you go, man? I didn't keep an eye on him because I trusted him, and now I'm kind of questioning what went on. Without me knowing anything.
Well, you know, that's why he's the first one I asked when he assured me that Manny was on no drugs. So I took it to Cons, and then Cons told me to hear him, said no. So, but the thing is, you know, I hate to accuse anyone of something, but the thing is, we're going to fight the fight, and...
Yeah,
he's the only one that knows if he cheated or not, and but we're gonna win the fight, and I feel that Manny's at his best right now, and he's gonna knock him out. So, we're not gonna ask for anything special or anything like that, but it's certainly something.
I got to say this, that he does look a lot bigger, and I'm wondering, with that size getting bigger, does it mean that he's going to now be a little bit more stationary and willing to trade with your fighter? Are you hoping that he does that with that extra weight?
Yes, I do. That's my wish, actually. And the thing is, but last time he was pretty big last time also, but he's still mentally a counterpuncher, and I don't think he can change.
Right.
I think he's going to run like he always does.
Well, I hope not. I want a better fight than that.
I do too. I mean, I hope he stands the fight, but I don't think it's he's a counterpuncher by nature, and that's what he is.
Yeah, that's very true. It's hard to change your stripes, especially at, you know, 40 or 41, you know, his age. Well, Freddie, I know usually we do about 15 minutes, and we're at that point. I just want to thank you for your time and your candor, man. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Freddie. It's always fun having you on.
Make sure I don't get in trouble, okay?
Yeah, try to word those questions just right.
Okay.
Be careful.
Thanks, guys.
All right.
Freddie Roach here with us on Leaving the Ring. And you know what? Just listening to this interview and his answers to to the questions that were asked, I got to tell you that I have a little bit more respect for him to go, you know what? It almost sounded like he wanted to say, I screwed up by letting a strength conditioning coach into my gym and be involved with my fighters.
It was very interesting what he said, you know, and just to clarify to those conspiracy theorists that think I'm on the wild card and top rank payroll, I call everybody boss that I know. So he's not actually my boss.
Don't call me boss.
That's because you're not my boss. You're my compa. Totally different. But yeah, I call people chief, boss. Just chill out. I like to nip things in the bud before they become stupidity. I really liked his answers. I got to be honest, and I don't want to put him on the spot because I don't think people Well, I want to put everybody on the spot, but with the question of, well, from now on, are you going to do testing for all your fights? And it's not Freddie's call. That's Manny's call. Ariza is Manny's call. You know, his job is to train the guy, and that's he doesn't hire the rest of the team. He doesn't pay the rest of the team. People need to understand that it is Pacquiao's call. Just like with Nonito Donaire and Vada testing 365, 24/7, Bob really didn't have a say in that. It was going to happen regardless of, you know, if they said it's cool or not. Nonito was going to do it. I don't think people understand that. It's, you know, unless you sign a fighter and while you're signing him in that contract, you say, oh, by the way, all the fighters in my company get tested by this company and this is the way it's going to be, it's not going to happen. You can't impose anything outside of the contract that they don't want to agree with. So it's not like Bob can turn around and say, Chavez Jr., from now on, I'm not going to promote you and make millions of dollars unless you do this, you know, and change your contract. It's just, it's going to have to come from somewhere else. It's going to have to come from the commissions.
Yeah.
You know, and which is a scary thought because you know how I feel about the commissions.
Yeah, well.
It was interesting, though, that he just straight up said it. The strength coaches brought the drugs
into the sport, you know. And that's why with those answers, I was almost like hearing him saying, I screwed up by allowing a strength conditioning coach, which he didn't say. So don't quote and print it out there that he said that. But in so many ways, and you know, you read between those lines, he was saying that I screwed up. And
it was interesting. It was, yeah. His comments as of late have been very interesting. He said in one piece, you know, it was the one that with USA Today, where, you know, steroids is Manny's rice. He said, he actually asked Ariza what it is he was giving Manny. And I thought that was kind of interesting. He's kind of, in a sense, publicly
exploring.
Distancing.
Yeah,
exploring and distancing.
Exactly.
Which is interesting. You know.
Yeah, I think that's the right word. Is that he is he's putting that distance between him and Ariza.
And they've been distant for a while. And didn't we ask? We asked about Ariza the last time, and he was less forthcoming. It was kind of like, it's an internal fight. I don't really want to. He didn't seem to mind getting into it now.
Yeah, he did. You know what? I think it has a lot to do is that the end of days is there for him. You know what I mean?
That's pretty funny. Manny likes weird things. Question any man that likes balut, you know?
Exactly. Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. Speak to myself, Dave Duenas, and my partner, Gabriel Montoya. I'm being told that there's the problems with the website. It's just browsing. It's going up and down. I don't know if that's just on the Blog Talk. I'll check on our website, leavingtheringradio.com. If not, you can call in and listen to us live, 347-215-7598, and hopefully there's no problems there. I'm trying to work on it at the same time while we're breaking down fights and doing our interviews here. And let's patch in some fight fans. We want to talk about this past weekend fights here on Leaving the Ring. Avery wants to talk. Berto, what's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing
very
good,
well, thank you.
I want to ask you a question. Do you think Andre Berto's a bust, or do you think maybe he just went in there with a guy who was just way better than he was? Because I remember about 2 years ago, everybody was saying, Andre Berto was going to be the next Floyd Mayweather and this and that. And I want to know what you guys think about that.
I never thought he was going to be the next Floyd. I thought he was a good fighter. And I actually, you know, when they were talking about him and Pacquiao, I was like, hey, why not? You know, he's an aggressive dude. I think HBO stunted his growth, to be perfectly honest. He's been on, 10, 11 times, which turned him into a two-time-a-year fighter. No one gets better doing what they do best two times a year, you know, even if you're in the gym and all that. But then they also fed him a lot of easy guys.
I mean,
when you do a training camp and then you fight a guy that you're just going to blow out in 9 punches or a couple rounds, you don't really learn where your deficiencies are. Louis Colazzo, and I remember talking to somebody right after that fight, and I was wondering, can he get better? And I had heard, well, it depends on how hard he works in the gym and if he acknowledges the mistakes that he made. I don't know about you, but I've never seen him physically actually acknowledge those mistakes by showing new wrinkles in his game. He still just kind of bursts. He still, you know, doesn't use the jab.
He's still the same guy that fought Luis Collazo, to tell you the truth, you know?
I agree 100%.
You know, he stayed in a time capsule, never came out. He's not in the 2012. We're looking at a 2008 Andre Berto, and that's what Robert got. Take nothing away from Robert the Ghost, because I still think that Berto would have given anybody fits. He's a guy that could take a shot. He's a guy that can fall and get back up and still continue to be aggressive. He's not really easy to discourage at all. There's no fear in the guy's eyes. It's just that when it comes to adjustments and fighting smart, that's the department that's a little shady there. It's a little empty. Yeah. And that's what we saw Saturday night with Robert the Ghost. Robert, to me, has shown me a guy that he's almost kind of, I want to say he's a Andre Berto seek, but he's almost forming himself like that. He's figuring out ways to win. He's figuring out different styles that it's going to adapt and have a solid game plan against. And that contributes to his team and his motivation and stuff. I had this really weird email, and I didn't want to come off like a dick, but you know, I won't even say the name, but they contributed all to Jesus Christ and his religion. And I was like, Christ wasn't in there fighting with them, brother. This is all just from hard work. This is all from taking a step back and looking at what he needs to do as, in terms of what tools he has to take to a bigger job. You know what I mean? When you go to a bigger job, when you're doing small jobs, you got a small little truck and small little tools here and there, and that's good enough to build a house. But when you do a building, you need Gradle's lifts, and you need man lifts, and you need, you know, pipe threaders and all this other stuff. And that's what Robert did. He just brought more qualified machineries for himself to perform better. And Berto, unfortunately, is he's an old model, and he stayed like that. He hasn't progressed. He hasn't downloaded anything new.
Like Jeff Lacy. He kind of reminded me a lot like Jeff Lacy was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree on that, yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of, yeah, and that's the same problem. When you get to the cable level, all of a sudden you're worrying about dates rather than fights. I mean, look how much improved physically and technically Chris Areola was last year when he just said, you know what, I'm going to fight often. That's all I'm going to, I don't care what venue, TV, whatever, I'm fighting. And he fought a bunch of times. I saw him in the gym. Dave saw him too. 242, looking lean and mean. Better than I've ever, like, not that initial weight loss that he did where he looked kind of weak. He looked strong in there. It looked good. Now look at him this year. They're waiting around to be on TV. And he's not fighting. You know, now he's just got a date. But they've spent all this year kind of squandering the momentum of this little run that he's been on. I mean, fight. It's your job. Look how good Leo Santa Cruz is going to be next year. He's going to fight five times this year. Five. That's how you know, that's hard work, dedication. Yeah. I mean, if I only wrote an article once a month, I wouldn't be the writer that I am now. I can't even tell you how many articles I've written, because I just write all the time.
And here's another thing to point out, too, because some people are going to be like, well, wait, if a fighter is fighting consistently, sometimes they end up getting blown out. But that's what you call matchmaking. Let's talk a little bit about Jonathan Banks and Seth Mitchell. Seth Mitchell was being consistent. He was a guy that needed to catch up in his education of boxing, but fell short by fighting a guy that has been in the sport since he was like 9 years old. There's good in keeping your fighter busy, and there's bad by putting them with experienced guys to try to stay busy with them, you know?
Right.
And that's the case with Berto, is that he stayed with CD level guys and never progressed, never challenged himself to move up to B, never challenged himself to leave B to go to A. Where you see Robert the Ghost, who did take some time off because of injury, which was questionable when he got back in, and the first jump was to welterweight. That was the big question, was people were like, well, what, you know, is your shoulder fine? You're fighting bigger guys. You don't punch that hard. Can you do this? And that's why I want to applaud Robert the Ghost Guerrero, where you have to recognize is that he understood that. He knew they didn't have the power, so he needed to bring something different to the table, and that was a solid game plan. And it just tells you the intelligence of the kid.
Right.
I mean, it's, you know, varied styles, different levels of experience. These are the things – I've always said this about Al Haymon, you know, and I think he's good for the fighters. You know, I'm not sure if he's good for the sport – but, you know, good for the fighters in terms of how they get paid and the kind of exposure they get. But he's also bad for them, because I don't think he's particularly a good matchmaker. It's either real feast or famine. Either you could feast on the guy or you get feasted on. you don't see a progression in these guys. It's just highlight reel knockouts. And, you know, where I grew up, in the era that I grew up watching boxing, we're all about probably the same age, they got highlight reel knockouts the old-fashioned way. They earned them, you know, by fighting a tough guy and actually doing it. These guys, you know, beating a bum, beating a one- or two-round guy, not a bum, nobody's a bum, but you know what I mean, a lesser-tier fighter. That doesn't teach you anything. It just doesn't, you know?
Yeah,
and so, you know, like, look at that Carson Jones-Kell Brook fight.
Yeah.
That I bet he learned so much from that fight, and then see him in his next fight, and he looks better. It's because he went through trial by fire, and he actually won the fight, unlike Berto, who should have lost that fight and learned the lesson right then. But, you know, that's boxing. So,
I agree.
Avery, thanks very much, brother, for calling, and we'll put you back on hold.
Thank
you, brother.
Great call, man. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you, guys.
Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. You certainly can, or you can ask us if you want us to pick up a subject or ask a question out there for other fight fans to call in and give an answer, or you want to ask us a question, you certainly can on Twitter or on Facebook. Right now, I got a question from Treville Bell, who said, Dave, can you answer this on the show? Do you think Berto needs less chaos in his corner or a new trainer this late in his career? You know, that's a good question. You know, chaos being in... Being that he's got an entourage, chaos that, you know, with the whole VADA testing and that kind of falling apart. I want to know, you know what, let's talk about that chaos for a moment, because chaos I think might be too strong of a word. There's no question about his dedication and his work ethic when it comes to training and getting himself prepared and ready. Trainer-wise, though, is it too late in his career? He's still a young guy, and I think we're counting him out because of the two back-to-back losses, and they were wars. But this is a process, is whether or not his management and network want to take on, go backwards on. You know, with invested money in, a lot of times they want to see that return right away. So I wouldn't oppose of getting him a new trainer to take him back to some basics and get him out of that time capsule and bring him to the 2013 era. But it's a question with his management and the networks. Will they allow him to now kind of fall back and grow into a new fighter? And a lot of times we don't see that happen because when you got an established name and the name is there and they find another potential star, they're going to look at his way and go, well, this guy's already lost. We're not going to earn our return on him, so let's just sell him out and make our money by having him as a stepping stone. I don't know what Gabriel's thoughts would be. I would like to see him with a new trainer, but in that, even with the new trainer, he's still going to be rushed and he's still going to be fighting his way to get to the now time and not be left back. I don't know if that made any sense, but
well, I think I'm letting Mike Stafford know that this is your 20-minute call, your 20-minute text to remind you to come on. he's doing another show right now, so he's kind of in queue. I think that, you know, I don't like to advocate people losing their jobs, but I've observed them briefly in the gym a couple times. I think, I think the proof is in the pudding. Look at Berto's skills or lack thereof. He's got all the tools. You know, he's got a strong jab, he's got a good right hand, he's got a nice hook, he could obviously throw an uppercut. It's like he's got all the punches. He's built, like Steve said, he's built like a body puncher, that wide frame. He should be able to just get down in there and really kill you to the body, and he can. We've seen him do it. He also can throw combinations. He rarely does anymore. So maybe perhaps a move in weight and a move in trainer. You know, things aren't working. You're on a losing streak. But you lost. Yeah, you know, I just think, look at the footwork. And I've watched them work pads. It's not, you know, it's not the most compelling thing to watch in the world. You kind of watch it and go, what are they training for? And watching them spar, what are they training for? To sit on the ropes and get beaten on and then explode? I mean, a guy that spends that much willing time on the ropes should be able to fight better while he's on the ropes. Instead, I mean, watching him, and Guerrero bullied him. And every time Berto tried to escape out to his left or right, Robert didn't let him. Those things are fundamental things. Spinning out, getting off the ropes. I mean, you're a two-time champion. You probably should be able to do those things. But he's had a microwave career, so there you go.
Been in the mud too long that he doesn't know how to get out of it anymore. And I like to see Berto kind of stray away from his old trainer and find something new.
I
just don't know whether or not if that's gonna happen. It's going to happen. Yeah, that's the one thing. Loyalty is a big part with fighters where they don't really stray away right away. Unlike some of the fighters that they have an understanding that, you know what, I'm not going to get any better if I don't, you know, jump ship.
Change
here.
Something. Yeah.
Yeah. And Berto could contribute to, you know, like he was saying, the holding. He was kind of trying to blame the ref, you know. It made me not want to punch. It made me not want to do this. And that all falls to the denial that not able to get off on what I'm normally able to do in the gym. But then again, you're fighting a guy that's there for you to punch and open up on and for you to look good. Completely different story when you get in with a guy that's actually there to want to win. And I think that's what Berto's got to go back and look at. You know, he's not a bad fighter. I don't see any deterring of his boxing speed and power. But there's to say that he has deterring of skill, I can't say that because he still looks like the same guy I saw in 2008.
Yeah, without question. Still looks like the guy from 2008. That's the thing. I'm not sure what's going on with this issue with people having trouble getting on. I don't know. We'll see. the website issues while we're live. It's kind of hard for us to you know, we don't have an IT guy to just get in there and start, you know, working on it. But, yeah, I think, you know, like you said, Berto is he is who he is at this point, too. You get to that age, hitting 30. How many guys really change at 30? You know, how many people really change at 30? It would have to be a really drastic change. And he would have to really rededicate himself to a whole, just a whole other way of not living life, but just looking at fighting. I mean, he showed he was a willingness to change by employing the shoulder roll, which he didn't do very well.
Mm-hmm.
But that showed a willingness to change. He's got to come a little further, though, I think. And I think maybe the weight. That's one of the issues that you know, when you look at Al, he's got Keith Thurman, who they're kind of pushing. I wonder if, like, the pecking order is, like, you know, you got to stay at this weight because I got this other guy at this weight, and I don't want you guys to have to deal with each other. You know? I wonder that. Because Berto looked really drawn to me at the weigh-in. He didn't look like the Berto of old to me. He also been off for a long time, and making that weight after a year and a half, it's, you know, your body's like, wait a minute, we haven't done this in a while. You know, you're probably carrying 30 pounds extra than this, and now you're dropping down? Like, what the hell?
Right.
It's a hard process, especially if you don't do it the right way, you know? If you kind of cut any corners or anything, or don't rehydrate yourself properly, you know, any number of things could have made it, you know, made it hard for him to pull the trigger.
And I'm trying to figure it out right now, really quick. I'm just going to let you know that I'm trying to figure it out to see what's wrong. I'm going to just have to repost our.
Go ahead, we can just repost the link. Yeah,
that's what I'm going to try to do right now. I just got to look for it and grab it, and then I'll put it back up there, so that everybody can tune in and listen. So we apologize. It's always something. Always something, man.
Yeah. Well, it's blog. Blog Talk is always an adventure. Yeah, not really sure why it's doing this, but, you know, what are you going to do? We got a show to do. So we'll handle the show, and then we'll get to this later, I guess. Hard work, dedication. It's just the theme of tonight's show.
I'm figuring it out.
We're both kind of looking at it, and screw it. All I need to know is that the show is running, and that it's probably archiving right now, right?
It's running. It's just not. It's playing last Monday's show, which is Noche de Boxeo. So I am trying to figure it out right now.
But you and I wouldn't be on the air right now.
No, it wouldn't be on the air if it wasn't playing. And people were calling in and they can hear what we're saying.
They can hear it on the radio. That's
and there's some people that are actually listening on Facebook and other things. And so they can hear what we're saying. It's just that the folks that decide to go to the website. So you might want to try to go to Blog Talk and tune in and listen to the show. So we apologize if you can't hear us on the website. So but I am trying to figure that out. So just let me.
That's somebody said through Blog Talk Radio website. You guys are loud and clear. Well, there you go. go to Blog Talk, and then we can talk boxing some more. It's been a little while since we've been on the air. We took a little break, you know, did a little Thanksgiving action. I don't know about you. I had a really good Thanksgiving. Got to spend it with the family. Don't always get to see them, so that was kind of nice. Got to hang out with my brother, watch some fights. We watched, you know, Ricky Hatton.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that there.
Oh, man.
You know what? I got to say, though, that Ricky Hatton, and I'm going to retweet the whole thing. I got to say this, that Ricky didn't look that bad what I thought he was going to in his fight with Pachenko. You know, he was being aggressive. He was landing some shots. I just thought the weight division was just too much for him. You know, when we talk about guys just making a comeback, I thought that was a little bit too heavy for him. You saw him with his mouth open in those mid rounds, and Pachenko just threw that body shot and caught him. It wasn't like Ricky was taking a beat down. I don't know what your thought was, Gabriel, but, you know, I actually thought that he had a pretty decent performance, and I had him ahead on the scorecards.
Yeah, I thought Hatton was doing well. I think it's interesting what he said after the fight, because it's around the time he started to fall apart, like the fifth, sixth, and things started to go, you know, as the fight got deeper, he started to kind of come apart a little bit. You know, his face started to come apart a little bit, started to swell up, cut up. And, you know, Ricky's style, it was kind of funny watching on Twitter and checking out the fight at the same time, and people going, God, he needs to get his hands up, and he's getting hit too much. I'm like, have you guys not seen Ricky Hatton fight before? He gets hit too much, and he keeps his hands low. That's why he got knocked out twice in a row. That's why he's back, trying to redeem himself. I thought he got what he came for, but I found it interesting that he said it afterwards, that around the fifth and the sixth, I realized, you know, win or lose, I'm probably not going to fight again. And it's the same thing Shane Mosley told us. Midway through the fight, I'm not the same guy anymore. I think it's over. Fighters know. You know when it's over. I thought it was incredibly, incredibly disrespectful of, and maybe Richard Schaefer, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe he hadn't seen that press conference because he was promoting, you know, Berto Guerrero that same night. But for him to say, well, I think Hatton deserves a fight with Malignaggi, and trying to spin it, you know, and you shouldn't make a decision like retiring right after a fight. Well, Richard, if you've ever been in a boxing match before or a fight, you know, I don't think you have, considering I keep sending them email questions that you won't answer. That strikes me as somebody that doesn't really know how to stand up for themselves. You would know that a fighter knows better than anybody. The fighter is always the first to know and generally the last to admit it, that it's over. You know, everybody around him has to usually convince him. I thought it was really disrespectful to sit there and try to spin it and say that Ricky was wrong and we're going to try to make this fight anyways. I thought they were here to help the fighters. I don't know. That's just me. You know, I mean, Ricky's done. He's done. He told us he's done. He came back. I think he wanted to prove to himself that even in a losing effort, he could be competitive. You know, and he wasn't competitive with Pacquiao. I don't think the Hatton or the Mayweather fight bothers him as much as getting just blown out by Pacquiao. Dropped a couple times and out. And in a way that was just horrifying for people that knew him. I think for him this way to go out, going with the shot to the body, you know, hey, it could happen to anybody. And I was competitive and I was winning. I think he could live with that a little bit more. And, you know, props to him for just coming back and giving it a go like that. You know, to go from being super fat and having issues with drugs and suicidal to fighting at a top level against a really tough opponent. I would have never fought at 147, much less Shevchenko. I would have, you know, pulled the guy from featherweight or, like, lightweight that can't really punch and brought him up to 47 and done that if you really just want to get the win and get out of there. Obviously, the 17,000 tickets sold in, like, a day without an opponent proved that you could have put me in there with Ricky Hatton and it would have sold out.
You know?
So I just thought it was kind of a mismanaged comeback, but at the same time, for Ricky's sake, I think he got what he came for. And maybe with Shevchenko, who's not the biggest puncher on the planet, that was exactly who you want to find out about, you know, about yourself against, and kind of go, you know, if I was in here with a murderous puncher, how horrible would that be, you know?
So yeah,
good on Ricky.
Yeah, good for him. I mean, I think he gave a fun night for his fans. Like I said, I thought his performance was a lot better than was anticipated by a lot of us, you know, hardcore fight fans. I didn't think he was going to perform that well, but he did. But he came up short, And talking about coming up short, did I call it or not? I did say that DeMarco was going to lose, and I said that it was going to be his corner throwing in the white towel to stop the fight because he was not going to know for his own best interest to stop it on his own. Adrian Broner, just – man, and you know what I got to say this, is as much as we like to make the comparisons of Broner to Floyd Mayweather, I got to tell you that Broner, to me, fights a little bit more exciting, and he's willing to take – chances a bit more because he was getting caught with some big shots and he decided to stay in that pocket, which I didn't think he was going to do, but he did establish that jab, which I said he should do, and he was able to get the TKO against the tough, very tough Antonio DeMarco.
You know, hard work, dedication. I'm putting out the link right now. You can retweet that. I finally figured it out. Just click on the episode that says on air, and I think that's the one that works. In any case, yeah, Broner, dude. I mean, I'm sorry, but he's the goods. He's got skills. You know, I still don't think he'll be physically challenged until he gets to, you know, 47, 40. He's not the tallest guy in the world, so maybe I think 40 is going to really be where he's an absolute monster. But I talked to Mike Stafford earlier this week, a trainer who should be on with us in a few minutes. And he said they're making 135 no problem, and they're going to be there for quite a while. That isn't like 130 where he's just passing through. They're going to make a stand here at 135, and so I expect them to try to make that Ricky Burns fight. I expect them to take on all comers at that weight. It'd be interesting to see, you know, when they decide to move to 40. But he's only 23, so we're kind of in a rush with him. I just thought physically he was way too much for DeMarco. Never mind just the skills, but it was the way he employed them. I love how aggressive he is and how it's like a slow burn. He starts out nice and easy, and then middle of the fight and end of the fight, he just takes over and just gets you out of there. He doesn't waste any time with it. He takes his time, but when it's over, and he does it. I'm a fan. You know, I got to say, I enjoy watching him work. All the other stuff, you know, you can take it or leave it. He looks to me like a guy that's having a hell of a time, a really good time with his life and his career, and I don't really have a problem with it. I mean, I know people are always going to hold Ponce de Leon against him, just like they hold Castillo 1 against Floyd. And, yeah, it's going to be what it is. You know, he's probably never going to go back down that road. But since then, you really can't argue with what he did with DeMarco. You can't say, well, DeMarco was this or DeMarco was that. No, DeMarco was a real guy. He was a real champion who, you know, there was people picking him. Sorry, but you can't have it both ways. You can't say he was a good quality fighter and then take it away from Broner at the end just because he's able to make the weight and physically is a stronger guy. He's also very, very skilled, and he's showing to have a good chin. So we're stuck with the problem for a while. And it's a good problem to have. Well, hopefully the trainer calls in so we can talk more about the problem.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, love or hate him, he gave an excellent performance, and he gave us money worth in that fight. He stayed in that pocket. He was a surgeon, just picking apart Antonio DeMarco. DeMarco's punches were straight. Just point that out in the beginning of the fight, first round, second round, third round. He was throwing some straight punches, and he was trying to set up and establish a strong authority jab, but you know, Broner was just showing him, no, we're not going to have it. Jabbing to the stomach and coming back to the head, it made DeMarco be, you know, wary about throwing out his jab, and then sitting there with him forehead to forehead and Dude. Working the body, just working that body. And you know what, I there's one thing, if I have to be critical, if I had to pick something that I did not like with DeMarco, I mean, what Broner was doing was those little baby shots, because those little baby shots allowed DeMarco to throw something over him and land. That was the only time that DeMarco decided to open up, is when he saw that Broner was conserving himself. You know, where if you separate Floyd and Broner, that's something Floyd doesn't do. Unless it was the last fight with Miguel Cotto, he did do, and it was because, in my opinion, he was trying to, you know, keep some in the air chambers there to help him out throughout the final championship rounds. But with Broner, to me, it was like he was toying with him. It was almost like he was taunting him to throw something so he can counter. And that's why I said he likes to take a little bit more chances. He was wanting to DeMarco to become brave, throw something over that top so he could open up with an uppercut or catch him with a right hook or a left hook or catch him to the body. But at the same time, I was kind of like, man, don't mess with him. This kid is still strong. He's still dangerous. I wouldn't play with him like that at all.
Yeah. Why go into his kitchen and stay right in front of him? I mean, the kid's super athletic. You know, I think even making him chase you around is not going to work. Like I said, it's going to take a guy that hits just as hard. We'll find out about Broner and his depth when he meets somebody that's just as good as him, you know, that brings something dangerous to the table. We're not there yet. We're not at that point. I think they're going to get some title defenses and build them up as a draw, as well they should. And then, you know, we'll hit that De La Hoya period at some time. He strikes me as a gamer who actually wants to prove himself. You know, we'll see how that changes. But for right now, I mean, I think it's just, don't stand in the kitchen with him. And I don't mind little punches like you're talking about, the baby punches, because Guerrero did that. But I thought he did it beautifully in that he would tap, 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 and then rip with shots. He would increase the tempo and increase the velocity of his punches and really hammer home. And then he would go back to kind of light. It keeps the other guy busy, but if you don't actually ramp up to that and change the tempo, well, then, you're going to get countered over the top and broken down. I agree. I didn't like the game plan of DeMarco. I didn't see a game plan from DeMarco.
Now, I think we talked about this a little bit when the fight was announced, that we had said that DeMarco, we'll find out exactly where his head's at. You know, was that knockout of John Molina Jr., did it swell up his head a little bit where he believed that he had this one-punch knockout power? Or did he understand that he landed a great shot and he was probably not going to get that lucky with Broner? To me, it seemed like he went in there thinking, I got this one-punch KO power behind me, and I'm going to land a big shot. No matter what, I'm going to do what I normally do, let the other guy land a large amount of punches, and I'm going to probably sneak one in and turn everything around.
That plan never really works.
No.
You know? I mean, on some level, you know, maybe. I mean, every once in a while it works. You know, like John David Jackson, Jorge Castro, but that's pretty rare, you know? It's pretty rare. You know, like lure a guy in after getting your ass beat for like 9 rounds and then drop him, you know? It's better to kind of put the money in the bank. Why doesn't anybody go to the guy's body? You know, there's a lot of things. I haven't heard back from Mike Stafford, so we're going to see. You know, in all fairness, you know, I'm not going to accuse him of ducking the interview, but
let's patch in some fight fans in really quick that want to talk boxing here on
Leaving
the Ring. Yeah, we got some Saturday fights too as well. We still do got some past weekend fights that we need to talk about here on Leaving the Ring. And fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. Let's talk about Miguel Cotto and Austin Trout this Saturday, the junior middleweight fight. The fight at junior middleweight that everybody's been anticipating and waiting for. But let's patch in some fight fans that want to talk about that fight there. D, what's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving in the Ring.
What's happening? What's happening, fellas?
You know,
good,
how you doing,
Thanksgiving?
Man? Oh, it was great.
That's good. That's good.
How was yours?
It was good, man. I had a 3-day weekend there, so that worked out pretty good there.
Nice.
That was pretty nice. We all think dude's gonna give Cotto a run, or he can be a threat. I don't think so.
Trout?
I like that. No, yeah, Trout. Yeah, I don't think he's gonna be no serious threat like that.
I'm actually picking him. I just don't think that. I don't really think that the style is good for Cotto. You know, and I wrote something kind of about it this week about how you look at the guys that end up becoming their own promoters, and there was a difference between, like, remember, like Lion Promotions or, you know, all the little kind of shell companies, you know? And then, then you get real, you know, guys that actually are picking and choosing their opponents. Like Floyd Mayweather is very, very good at matchmaking himself. He knows when to get guys. He learned from the best. He learned from Bob Arum and Top Rank. And then you look at Miguel Cotto, who has kind of moved on to his, being his own promoter. First big fight was with Mayweather, and everybody else handled that for him. But now they're finding out the ugly truth in New York about that you don't just put Miguel Cotto in the garden and expect everybody to show up. I have a piece coming out about it later on tonight. And it is kind of interesting that you know, like Bob said, he thinks that they're going to have less tickets sold for this fight than Cotto's debut in the garden. I guess it was, you know, against Muhammad Abdullayev. They did 7 shows there at the Garden. This will be his 8th appearance there. They did, I think, 13 overall on the East Coast and like 10 in New York or 9 in New York. They built something with Cotto. And Bob explained to me kind of the nuts and bolts of promotion and that how, you know, in like Vegas or like L.A., everybody's kind of closer together, all the media. They'll show up to the gym. You'll get lots of guys to show up. In New York, it's different. You got guys that live in Jersey, in Queens, and all the different boroughs. And when you set a media event, it's actually harder for them to all get there. And if you set it up on the day of another fight that you're going to do this thing, everybody's got to show up. If you do it in the morning, well, then they're stuck in the city from, like, you know, 10 in the morning till later on that night when it's a later feed because it's on the East Coast. And so you got to get guys that go, you know what, I'm not going to sit in the city for 9 hours for nothing to do. I'll just ask questions at the fight. You don't get as much media pressure if you don't know which outlets to go to. Like, it's right. Most people think that, you know, if you're going to sell Cotto tickets, Bob explained this to me today, you go to the New York Times because that's the big outlet, right? Wrong. Most Puerto Ricans, by their research, read the New York Daily News, which gets a lot of circulation as well. But you don't see them really pushing things in the New York Daily News, apparently. There's a lot of little things that Golden Boy learned over the years, that Top Rank learned over the years that Golden Boy has not. They also priced the tickets exactly the same as Cotto Margarito at the Garden. Now, is this fight as sexy as Cotto Margarito 2 at the Garden? Absolutely not. Nobody knows who Trout is. But in getting to the fight and answering your question, I think a tall southpaw who's in the prime of his life that understands how to move and that he's got to be a little aggressive but at the same time smart against a bull who comes in kind of face first a little bit and kind of is shorter, a little bit slower. He's less face first than he used to be, but I just like Trout. I think it's his time. He wants to prove something, and I think he's going to. That's just my take.
I think he's gonna do like you say. He can move. He's got a little bit of speed, and that's all I really see. I think that could backfire on him because he's gonna try to outbox it, and I think Cotto is gonna be the more aggressor and be up in his chest trying to do it like that. I think Cotto is gonna do it on points. That's how I see it going down. He ain't got a whole lot of power, so I don't see him trying to slug it out. I don't see him trying to slug it out with Cotto, you know. I don't see it happening like that. But you might be on to something with that right there, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be up to Austin to not pick and choose, you know, kind of like just kind of pick away slowly at Cotto and eke out, well, I made him miss a bunch and I hit him 5 times, therefore I win the round on defense and a couple clean punches. It's going to take more than that. He's got to take it to Cotto. Even if he fights that way for, like, say, the first 4 rounds, and then the middle rounds start to ramp it up, and then really tries to make it pay off in the end, that would really be what Trout needs to do. We'll see. You know, I think it's a very interesting matchup, and it goes, again, to the promoter that's not used to being a promoter, and also being a matchmaker, and not being used to picking his own matches. I don't think in a million years Top Rank would have picked Austin Trout to fight Miguel Cotto. I just don't.
Right. That sounded kind of awkward also. So.
Yeah. Him? A guy from Las Cruces.
We'll see what happens there. Real quick, Gabe, what the hell, man? Were you about to whip Alex's ass or what?
I'm not going to sit here and pretend like that was going to happen. But, I mean, you know, it's a street fight. And anybody can win, especially when you have two guys that train often. I know Alex trains in MMA, and he's obviously in very good shape. He's bigger than I am, not taller, but you know, stouter, probably weighs outweighs me by at least 30, 40 pounds. I train as well. So not an MMA, but I have a mix of arts that I use. So I guess it is kind of an MMA, but not ground game. Not as much anyway. So I've started training in ground game recently. So I have no idea. Anything could happen. I mean, you know, I wasn't particularly comfortable. And I'm not going to sit here and say I had his number because, let's be honest, for 2.5 minutes, I circled away and tried to defuse the situation, explaining I'm a reporter, asking questions about you. If you don't like it and want to get violent, that's your problem. And he spent 2.5 minutes telling me to put my hands up so that he could begin assaulting me. When I threw my sunglasses down and put my fists up and said, all right, fuck it, let's do this, he didn't throw any punches. He didn't do anything. So I don't know. It was what it was. Very interesting. I think it's kind of interesting.
You didn't have any
behavior.
More runs with him then since that?
No, after they kind of the security stepped in and he started heading into the gym and I was heading into the gym, I said to him, you know, we can still do an interview. I got plenty of questions for you. I can give you a call or we could do it here or whatever. And he just glared at me and walked inside and went, you know, I mean, I don't know. It's interesting. You could actually see an interview on the Boxing Channel TV that he did right after that happened. You can see that he's still visibly upset. And I believe as the video starts, he's staring off in a certain reporter's direction. So I don't know. It was what it was. Another day in the office, kind of interesting stuff, pissing people off, you know. But I'm not going to sit here and brag and say I would have kicked his ass. I honestly, you know, no one on the street in a street fight knows what's going to happen. Anything could have happened. You know, I'm kind of just glad nobody got hurt, you know.
I'm about to say, maybe none of the security tried to come at you aggressive like that, you know,
The security there has made it very clear that I'm welcome in that gym and that it's neutral ground, that there's no fighting allowed, certainly not with the press. So they were all very, very gracious. And Freddie's let it be known, and Marie and everybody, Rob, Peters, who broke up the fight, they all know me, and they know my work, and they respect it. And they respect that relationship. So it was all good.
Cool. All right, fellas. I'm going to stay down here and listen to y'all.
Cool.
Good talking.
I appreciate it. Always good talking to you. Have a good holiday if I don't get a chance.
You know, and D, just really quick, D, what Gabriel's failing to tell you is that Alex was going to throw the milkshake, but then thought twice about it and goes, oh, if I throw it, then everybody's going to know what's in it. All right, brother, thanks for calling in, man. You take care. You know, hey, you know what's funny? The whole time I was, you know, trying to jump into conversation, and now I'm like, damn, these guys not hear me talking. I have myself on mute.
That is time. We're just ignoring you, Dave.
I know. Ignoring me.
I can't do that.
Kelly Pavlik and Andre Ward is on. They had their press conference this past week. You know, I threw it out there asking fight fans what they thought about it. And, you know, every fight fan that had anything to say, good or bad, just ended up to be the same ending, which was Ward by KO. Not thinking much of what Kelly Pavlik brings to the table. Forgetting he does bring power. He has that one punch knockout power. He hasn't really, I can't say he's really shown it at 168 because he's been fighting lesser opponents than himself. You know, he's been trying to get himself back together with Robert Garcia at the academy. It's just too soon. I honestly thought it was a bit rushed for himself, not for Ward. Obviously, Ward needs a dance partner and a recognizable one so he can continue making those big, nice, healthy paydays. So it's knowing which, though, Gabriel, or some fight fans are pissed off at him about it. They're like, come on, seriously, man, you should be ashamed of yourself fighting a guy that's not ready for you. That's really not, shouldn't have no business getting a title shot at this moment.
Well, I mean, he just fought Chad Dawson, the light heavyweight champion of the world. Fought him at 168. I mean, we can criticize that, I guess. He also just fought a pretty interesting field in the Super 6. And he fought and dominated Carl Froch, a guy that people are now still saying, well, give him the rematch with Ward because he could do better the second time. And he's more exciting anyways. Well, you know, I think on some level, you got to give Ward a little bit of a pass. I mean,
I honestly, I have... I even said this after his last win over Chad Big Bad Dawson. Was he's been consistent. He was in the tournament. He's faced the best that you know that are willing to want and wanting to face him. And Kelly Pavlik to me is a name that is a big money name for himself. And there's no shame in that. It's a name that it's going to be on his ledger. Is it going to really make a big difference to his legacy whether he fought him or he didn't? No. Unless Kelly started to win and win big, you know. But to keep himself ready and to keep himself going, why not? Why not? Lucian Boutte is out there trying to reestablish himself, which was once at one time considered the biggest threat to Andre Ward.
Well, and think of it this way, too. For years, you know, during that Super 6, everybody kept saying, Boutte's the number, he was the best guy not in the Super 6. He's number two. Screw the rest of the Super 6, he's number two. Well, how could you be number two if you weren't in the Super 6, proving yourself against the top guys in the sport? Well, Andre Ward was doing that. And at the same time, everybody was calling Boutte the best. He was taking on, you know, guys that we all knew he was going to beat. You know, McGee, Miranda. He's got, you know, Miranda was a guy that Andre Ward had already beaten. So they gave him a pass because he sells tickets. And he's pretty, you know, kind of exciting. I've never been terribly excited by Boutte. I've never been big on Boutte. But I think he's important. Guys like him, draws, are important to the sport. But it's interesting. There's this thing about Ward that people, when is he going to go overseas? When is he going to prove himself by doing that? I'd be more concerned about, like, how many more tickets can he sell in Oakland, and can we build that up? And maybe can Golden Boy and Robert Guerrero go and work out with Dan Goose and Andre Ward some sort of deal where they do a co-promotion and they bring the Bay Area a huge night of fights? That's what I'm more concerned with. If we were fighting, if this was the 70s and the 80s, even the 90s to some extent, Andre Ward would be fighting more often. We wouldn't complain when he takes on a fighter that's going to bring action to him and probably get stopped. I mean, it is entertainment on some level. And Ward, you know, who would you prefer him to fight other than Kelly Pavlik? Give me, you know, if somebody can give me a better, not a rematch, but, you know, let's see, you know, do you think that he should go and fight Karl Frotch in England after shutting him out basically for 12 rounds? Is that fair? Is that even good business sense? I mean, I'm sure they could sell a lot of tickets over there. That's good business sense. But for him, why would he go over there when he could probably make good money fighting in his hometown against a guy that he knows he can beat? You know, I don't know. I'm not completely turned off by it. But at the same time, I also kind of look at it and go, all these guys roll out their pound-for-pound lists. And, you know, there was actually somebody actually asked the question of Guerrero, how does this affect the – or Richard Schaefer, actually, which I thought was even funnier – how does this affect the pound-for-pound rankings, this win? Thinking like that is just absolutely ridiculous. It's actually a substitute to thinking. But you have to look at it and say, well, we're trying to place Andre Ward on this list, this imaginary list, and we're going to move him up or we're going to move him down based on this Kelly Pavlik fight. It just kind of shows how stupid pound-for-pound lists. I propose a list that just lists maybe the 10 best fighters in the world in no particular order. There doesn't need to be a number one. The number one would present itself as clearly the best guy, and he would do that by fighting the best people and fighting often. We don't really have that in this sport, so
right.
Until we do, who gives a shit about pound for pound or any list for that matter? I just think it's going to be an interesting fight, a fun fight, and we'll see if Andre plays it safe against a guy that really gave an old Bernard Hopkins one of his most exciting performances because he's so stationary. Is Ward going to play it safe, or is he going to try to succeed where Hopkins failed and stop Kelly Pavlik? That's the question to me. I don't know.
You know, it's boxing. Anything can happen. You know, especially with a guy that has got so much stump on his hands. I remember back when Kelly was coming up, they put him in with Miranda. Miranda was, you know, they had a big showcase for him, a huge story documentary, a short story documentary on him before the fight, completely ignored Kelly Pavlik, and we saw what happened. He was able to stop Miranda, beat him in a back and forth war. And then he gets in with Jermaine Taylor, the All-American Olympian boy who was supposed to, as well, outbox him and put him in his place, and he was able to just trail horse behind his punches and land some big ones and stop him. But he is facing a much bigger beast and a real technician. And that's my thing, is that he's going to be facing a guy that's going to probably nullify anything that he throws. And Cali's going to have to be a little raunchy with his boxing style against Ward, because we know what the capabilities Ward can do. He can shut you down by getting in close. He can fight in the inside. He can jab in the outside. He definitely can use his speed when he feels like it's necessary. Or he could just sit back and counter over the top of your punches. So this is a big exam for Cali Pavlik, and this is a big exam for Robert Garcia. Robert's having some great success with his fighters. I honestly, out of all the fights we've seen him be in, except for the Antonio Margarito fight, this is by far the biggest test for Robert Garcia in terms of chalking up a game plan on the board and seeing if it's going to work against Andre Ward.
It's going to be very interesting seeing what Cali Pavlik brings to the table. Is he going to go crazy? Is he going to just really go for broke and try to find that chin that everybody always thinks is bad because Ward got dropped earlier in his career? I don't think it's bad. I was there at the Will Rosinski fight. And I remember the fight before that, I was like, Kelly's looking a little better. Some snap to his punches.
Yeah, he had a little bit more bounce to his punches.
And then Rosinski, I thought he looked like crap.
Yeah.
He looked flat to me, and the snap from his punches was gone. He's kind of pushing the punches. Maybe Rosinski's fiance kind of drained the life out of his punches as she drained the life out of the patience of everybody at ringside. I don't know. But he didn't look good to me.
Also, I have a sense that the opponents put in front of him, a fighter has to have a motivation. And regardless that Cali's trying to get his career back on track, he's still a fighter. And he's still, in his mind, he's a top-level fighter. And going backwards and far back in where he was in the sense of fighting four-round, six-round fighters, a fighter of his caliber recognize that, and they're like, yeah, I could beat this guy on any given day. And he's lost to the best. It's not like he's lost to some slumps. He's lost to the best out there. I'm wondering, with the Ward fight, do we see the best of Cali Pavlik? Because this is a fight he's up for. This is a fight that he knows he's got to be in top notch and he's got to go for it. Or this could be the ending of his career and his dreams of being back on top.
Yeah, I mean, if I hate to use this word because I think it's way overused in the sport. This could be the cash out. This could be a reward for, bad behavior. Or, I don't spend a lot of time in that gym, so I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and pretend. I don't know Cali inside and out. Steve would be able to answer that a lot better than I could. I don't know. It is interesting. I'm getting the feeling that Mr. Stafford, I know, was on a radio show tonight or was going to be at 5:15 and 8:15 his time. And I also wrote an article entitled Broner DeMarco and the USADA testing that didn't happen today. So I don't know if that had something to do with it. I assured him, actually, that all my questions about drug testing were over in regards to him and Adrian.
Right.
Because I don't know if you read the piece.
I haven't read the piece. Yeah, I haven't.
I'm not saying that they did anything. I'm not even trying to make a rumor. I try to be real careful about that. Contrary to popular belief, I don't write rumors. But the facts of the case were, they called the boy wanted it. They insisted on VADA. They wanted to control the results, according to Gary Shaw. And he didn't let that happen. They ended up signing the contract, sending it off. Mike Stafford's people, Broner's people, sent it off immediately, and they were all ready to go. Adrian even had his one-hour, his conference call with USADA, where they give you education on the protocol and how everything's going to work during testing. not everything, but you know whereabouts for him and what medications are you on, things like that. He had his call. DeMarco never did. And somewhere in there, the testing got canceled. Nobody ever notified Gary Shaw. No one notified Adrian Broner's team. They just canceled it. DeMarco never got his education call. And my question is, why did that happen? Who was told? What is the whole thing that's going on here? Why wouldn't you tell Gary Shaw, who didn't find out until DeMarco told him after the fight, that USADA had not come to camp, even though they agreed to it? All very strange. And it wouldn't be so strange if it wasn't the second time that it's happened. I don't know. Things are going weird. So maybe Mike didn't want to come on. I don't know. We'll see. I mean, honestly, you know, with the kind of suspicion people have thrown to the wild card, you would think Freddie Roach wouldn't want to be interviewed with me. I thought that was really nice. But he's always been a friend of our show, so I didn't see why he wouldn't come on. But I don't know. We'll see with Mike. You know, maybe it's just an honest mistake. But I texted him, and there was no response. So let's take some callers.
Fight fans, you want to call in, certainly can. 347-215-7598. Speak to myself, Dave Duenas, and my partner, Gabriel Montoya, and the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. Don't forget, every Monday night at 5 p.m., Noche de Boxeo is Pacific time. It's at 5 p.m. Pacific and 8 Eastern time. The Boxing Fix is going to be coming back really soon. There was just some things that, life kicked in. So the folks at the Boxing Fix had to take a break. They'll be back, though, hopefully sooner than better for them and stuff. But hey, let's break down some fights that are gonna be happening this Saturday, Gabriel. I want to talk about the Miguel Cotto and Austin Trout. D, who was a caller, called in a little earlier, was talking about his take and what he thought of Austin Trout, and then you gave up your breakdown. You know, I said this a while back. I did.
Sorry, man. I was cleaning the spoon. I apologize, readers. I've trained after the media day with 50 Cent today for about an hour, and then I rushed home, and I had to eat, man. I got to eat. I'm starving. You can't work out in the night. So my apologies for you listening to me lick my chops.
Yeah, I was wondering. I was like, what the hell is he doing over there, man? Anyways, I said this a while back. I even said this on another radio show that asked me to be on. And we're talking about, I want to say 6, 7, maybe even 8 months ago, when they asked me about Austin Trout. What were my thoughts about him? Do you think he, if he was to get a shot at Miguel Cotto or any of these guys like Floyd Mayweather, what do you think? And I said he's a solid contender. He reminds me of like a Frankie Randall and on the Obakar, guys that are very solid. On a good day, they should win because they bring a lot to the table. You know, now Austin Trout's not one of the flashiest guys in the world. And, you know, and you always hear me say this about special effects. You know, he doesn't have that special effect. What he does have, though, is he has a consistency in boxing that's needed. And sometimes that solid part of consistency gets you to the point where he need to be as a champion. You know, does it keep you up the ladder in terms of bringing fans and all the riches and fruits that a champion wishes and dreams of? No, not really. But what it does do, it keeps you in line for a big money fight to be called on as an opponent. And that's exactly what we have from Austin Trout. The thing, though, is that fight fans that know very little of him don't understand that he's a contender. And in the world of boxing, contenders meant something. Those were the guys that got the opportunities to go after a champion and upset them. Took that belt away from them if they weren't properly prepared or if they were just falling down that ladder. That's what Austin Trout is. He's not an opponent. He's a contender. And he's a solid one. And I like everything he brings to the table. Now, is his temperament one that's going to be go right after Miguel Cotto, challenge him, find out if he's really a natural 154-pounder? Is his punches going to be able to hurt Austin Trout? He's not one of those kind of guys that wants to find out. He's one of those kind of guys that wants to establish himself and keep himself there with that game plan. And with that alone, he's probably going to give rounds away. And he's probably not going to make it that completely exciting because once he does throw a combination, I can really see Miguel Cotto going, okay, I can't bully him, so I'm going to have to revert to what I've done before, which is be the light-footed boxer. And that's where Austin's got to ask himself, do I want to stay a contender or do I want to be a champion? Because the champion's going to have to go after the challenger.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, he better not. Austin, I think Austin understands who he is in this. I think that's a great. That's a really great way you put that. That you know, he's not necessarily a champion. He's a title holder, but in this day and age, what that means is you're a contender. You're not quite a champion. You've got to beat another champion in order to be that. It's an interesting fight. I think that yeah, if Austin fights like, hey, I'm bringing a belt to the party. You got to take it from me. Not in New York City, not in the Garden, not against Cotto, you don't. You know, Cotto needs to still be standing and have been active and not to get totally embarrassed, and he wins. That's just the end of story. Trout has had to, I think, not come out of character, but display the best possible character possible.
Absolutely.
That he's ever shown. I think that's what it comes down to. He's got to draw his line in the sand. He's got to be the bull to the matador. He's got to win the jab war. He's got to get to Cotto's body a little bit, slow him down. And more importantly, because judges score blood, he's got to jack up his face. He's got to put the wear and tear on his face where it belongs.
He's got to make Miguel look like a beat fighter. Towards the end of those championship rounds, Miguel's got to look worn out, gassed out, and beat up. And that's why I go back where the reality is that Trout is the champion, but the arena, the Garden in New York City, they're not looking at him as the champion. They're looking at him as the challenger, the opponent. And that's where he's going to have to separate that. He's going to have to understand that Miguel Cotto on every right has the right to call himself a champion. You know, he's been there. He's fought these big fights. He's won. He's lost. You know, he's established himself. Where Trout, to me, he is a champion because he's got that belt. And he's been steady. And he's put in the work. But if we're going back to the 60s and 70s and 80s, he'd be a contender. And there's nothing wrong with that. And I hope some folks out there don't take that as an insult, because it's really not. Contenders are what makes this sport great. Those are the guys that excel. Those are the guys that, when that moment that they have to reach and grasp and take seize of it, they do it. And then they move from being a contender to a champion. And that's why what I mean with Trout. He's got to really fight like a champion by going after the challenger when that right moment is there. Not sit back and go, well, I'm the champion. He needs to challenge me. He needs to come after me. It's not going to work like that. That's not the way the name game goes in boxing.
This is true. You know, I think it's – you got to prove it, you know. Hard work, dedication. You got to you got to keep – you got to keep the pressure on.
Were you circling Alex Ariza going, hard work, dedication?
No, I was circling Alex Ariza going, look,
Alex Ariza was going, shake, not stir, shake, not stir.
That's very funny.
That's bad.
He's
going to want to punch me now when he sees me.
Like I said, I was really honest in my Twitter feed and my Facebook post about it. Like, there's no shame in my game. You know, if I know you're an MMA guy and you lock people up and that's what you want to do, and you look at me and go, I'm going to lock you up and I want everybody to see what I'm about to do to you. That's what he said to me while he was chasing me down. I'm going to keep moving because that's my game. You know, I walk you into things. So I'm going to keep backing up. Ain't no shame in my game. I'm a 39-year-old man. I don't need to be getting into a fist fight. I will if I have to. And that's finally what it came down to. I backed into a moving car coming through the tunnel. I was so focused on Alex. And I think that's when people freaked out and realized, oh, this is actually happening.
Right.
I honestly
think that some people forget that we're fight fans and media is what we do either as our job or, you know, or it's our passion or whatever the case is, you know, and I've had a few people that hit me up and go, oh, I heard you did this and you were going to, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I never engage in it. I don't want to get – I mean, you get some Twitter punks on here, and I really don't want to get involved in that, because the reason being is For what? What am I going to get out of it? What are you going to get out of it?
I interact with people only on one level. Like, I went on East Side Boxing. I went on another site. And I knew that the people would talk about it. So, you know, there's guys saying this, that. And I went in, clarified what happened. I don't spend a lot of time arguing with idiots, because the longer you do, the harder it is to tell who the idiot is.
Exactly.
So I just kind of clarify and move on. Like I said, I'm not sitting here bragging, and I punked Alex Ariza. That's just, you know, we were two guys, we're at an issue. I tried to reason through it, and then when reason wasn't working, then you go to the violence.
That's all you can do.
That's all you really can do, you know, and that's where we hit. I hope that we get to a point where I can actually call him and just say, yo, I need to do an interview with you because I do have a lot of questions for him. And
we both do.
Yeah. And if he answers them, cool. If he says no comment, then everybody, you know, will see what I print.
Hey, and I tell you what, I will be at the Amir Khan and Carlos Molina fight. So fight fans out there, you want to, you know, kick back and hang out with myself and Gabriel here, let us know. We'll hang out, have a couple of brewskis, talk some boxing, and then go watch the fight. Hey, let's pat in some fight fans here, 347-215-7598. And when we patch in a fight fan here, Gabriel will be pulling up the fight schedule for this weekend. But let's get Rob Regal, who does his chores while listening to Leaving the Ring. What's up, brother? How you doing, man?
Hey, what's going on? No, I had to do chores because there was no show last night. I didn't have no way out of it, you know?
Sorry about that, man.
No, I'm good. Hey, happy Thanksgiving, y'all, man. It's great. I'm excited, man. It's a back-to-back-to-back weekend, you know what I mean?
And
we got some good undercards. I think I'm more excited about the Pacquiao Marquez undercard than I am about the main event. I mean, it's always a tense match with those two, but I mean, the undercards real good. But do y'all know anything about the opponent as far as Daniel Jacobs? I'm glad to see he's pretty much back in the ring, like a couple of months after his win.
Yeah, I love that he's being more active. You know, it's just nice that Danny's fighting again. You know, he's a hell of a guy, a hell of a human being, and what he's been through has been pretty tough. He's fighting Chris Fitzpatrick, 15 wins, 6 knockouts, 2 losses, 1 by knockout, no draws. I think they're taking their time. I think it's the right thing, though. When you fight this often, you want to just get your feet wet. You know, now this guy will probably go rounds, and then Danny will kind of start to get everything underneath him again. So I think it's a nice move by them to do that. He just lost by technical decision to Patrick Majewski, who's a middleweight also. Pretty talented guy. He's only got 1 loss, and that was back in July. So Fitzpatrick's been sitting on the shelf for a while, but generally he goes rounds. He's got some early knockouts, but then he's also got some longer fights. So I expect Danny to knock him out, but it might take 2 or 3 rounds to do it.
What's expected, you know, for Danny? I mean, he got back, and he had already hit the fight of his life. So it's expected for him to get some guys in there that are going to put in the work for him to get some rounds in to see where he's going to be at. A little later in his career. We did lose Rob Regal. So let's patch in another fight fan who's waiting on the hold call here. I think it's Azam or Adam. I think they might have misspelled it. I hope I got it right. He wants to talk. Canelo is overrated. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
What's up? It's Adam, actually.
Okay, it's Adam. He put AZ. Okay, so I was like, man, I never heard that name before. But what's up, brother?
I want to talk about Canelo being really, really overrated to a point that's, like, unexplainable. Canelo really hasn't fought a true middleweight. He's fought who? Jose Tito Lopez, who blew up to 14 pounds to fight Canelo. And he was, like, an underdog fighting Victor Ortiz. He fought Matthew Hatton, like, and then he's getting shots at Mayweather. I mean, I understand Canelo is the money, but, you know, you need to test Canelo first. He needs to be touched, actually.
Yeah, that's what the old saying, money talks. And obviously what Canelo brings is money, and it does talk. And let's be honest here. I think Canelo knows that he hasn't really tested himself, but that's one of the reasons why he hung up on us when we were asking him,
right.
You know, what was his responsibility as a champion, which is to clean out a division of his own weight class. I mean, does he have boxing skills? Absolutely. But we just don't know at what level, at what weight, his skills really where we should put it at. Gabriel?
Yeah, it's time. It's that time. You know, I need to know what the guy's really got. And I think he's got a lot of depth, Canelo. You know, I think that people really get mad about this whole developing process. And it was interesting listening to 50 Cent talk, because you're watching a promoter be born. And he's going, you know, I don't want to go through this whole long process where these guys, you take forever to, you know, put fights together. And you know, we want to kind of get more to the action sooner in a career. So I'm thinking, like, I guarantee you, you know, as soon as you invest a bit of money in a guy and you rush him into a big fight and he loses, you're going to change that philosophy. You know, especially working with a group like Top Rank, Bob said he's learning from us now, people who know how to do it the right way, how to develop fights, how to develop fighters and draws. Like, that's a three-headed monster right there. You know, you really need to take your time. And not to denigrate 50, I thought he was great today. I thought he was really positive. I'm really excited about him being in the sport, to be perfectly honest. It was a really fun time today listening to him talk. You know, I just think, yeah, it is about that time for
Canelo.
Yeah, I think it's time for Canelo to you know, make a move. You know, let's do it. Richard Schaefer said that they're going to do it. I expect that to happen in 2013. I agree with you, though. Why put him straight to Floyd? You know, unless
that's exactly what I'm saying. I mean,
I say it's like an insult, because he's
aiming at Cotto and he's aiming at Mayweather. Like, first of all, fight somebody that's ranked. First of all,
here's the thing, though. This is why you may be hearing this. This is what I've been told. I don't know how true it is. I'm kind of looking into it. That the contract is almost up with Canelo. And so they're putting him in with a big fight because he may not re-sign with them. And so that there's a possibility of the quote-unquote cash-out happening or getting a little return on their investment, put him in with a monster like Floyd, who will probably beat him. Although that's not – I don't think that's guaranteed. I think Canelo could give him a run for his money with that jab and his very patient style. But that might be why they're saying, no, we're going to put Canelo in with this guy. Or here's option B. This is something Oscar did a few times in his career, learned it from Bob Arum. When you link your guy with other guys that are good, even if you never fight them or have no intention, it makes your guy seem like he's in the class with those guys, if that makes sense. So you keep talking about him like he's going to fight and
it's a mirage.
Right. But then in the meantime, you go, and by the way, he's going to fight Dave Duenas next week. You know, although, Dave, you do outweigh him. But, you know, you're going to put him in with
only
a guy.
Only by a pound.
You love that slim fat. Yeah, but you know what I mean? You put him in with a guy that, well, in the meantime, we're going to get to those good fights with so-and-so and Sugar Ray Robinson, but in the meantime, we're going to fight this guy, you know?
Right.
He's smaller than him. So it's a bit of promotion. I think that's...
Right, it is, and I can understand that. I mean, they're protecting, their superstar, and that's completely understandable. I mean, Bob Arum's known to protecting fighters, like Julio Cesar Chavez, who's been protected all his whole career until he got destroyed by Sergio. But, I mean, it's understandable that Golden Boy's doing this, but if you're going to protect him, at least let him fight somebody that's ranked at least, you know? Don't make him jump and, Canelo's, like, calling out Sergio, Cotto, and Mayweather. Like, you know, I want him to, you know, he's completely overrated. I mean, yeah, he's a good boxer, right? But he's never really faced a guy in his weight, and it's, you know, that's naturally there, that's good, that's ranked, you know?
Well, see, look, here's a little bit of difference of what Top Rank does, you know, when they protect their fighters. They do put them in with guys that can punch but don't have movement. So their guy that does have a bit more movement or maybe a bit bigger than them can shine and look better. Then what they eventually do is they end up serving them up, hoping that how they padded him up, they're going to be the successor. With Chavez's case, obviously he wasn't. With Golden Boy, they're really trying to follow that pattern. But the problem is that they don't know how to follow it to the T. So when they do try to patent up Canelo's record with opponents, theirs is a little bit more blunt and it's in your face and it's like the obvious. Like we already know, like, man, what are you doing? You know, give them something that we can at least sink our teeth in and maybe go, well, an Andy Lee does have a chance because he is a warrior and he's been in big fights and he can punch. Where Canelo, we haven't been able. Josecito Lopez, yeah, you know, he had a tremendous fight with Victor Ortiz. But we still weren't sure yet from jumping up two weights how well he was going to do against Canelo. Now, though, we all know this. How many of us are going to be sold into the Floyd Mayweather? Unfortunately, all the Canelo fans, they're going to be sold into it. So, in all honesty, Golden Boy is doing exactly what Top Rank does, just that they just don't do it as sneaky or secretive as Top Rank does it. That's just the bottom line. Adam, thanks for calling in, brother. We're going to put you back on hold, okay?
All right. Thank you.
We're going to have thank you, man. I appreciate it. We're going to have a special caller in about 5 minutes. So I want to get to the fight schedule. I'm all ready, if you're ready. Are you ready?
Well, we got a lot of calls right here really quick that want to ask him questions.
Oh, okay, that's hot, too. Yeah, well, I mean, we're not in a rush. We're on our time.
Right. So let's go with Mike, who wants to ask you, Gable, about 50 Cent. What's up, Mike? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
What's up, guys? How you guys doing?
Doing good. Thank you.
Yeah, I just had a question. Like, I saw some YouTube interviews with 50 at his media day, and I know Gabe, I heard you spoke to him, but I didn't really get to hear what you thought of him. I'm just seeing for the sense I saw what I kind of think I've seen of his interview with, like, Radio Raheem. Like, doesn't it seem 50, like, he's not really in it for the long haul with this promoting thing? Like, 2 years from now, I don't see 50 Cent still being in the boxing game.
You know, I didn't get a chance to one-on-one with him. I didn't really even get a chance to ask him many questions. I asked one that he didn't answer. But he kind of like cut it off at a certain point. It was what 50 brings is a very different thing to the sport. You had the Hollywood Reporter there, Entertainment Tonight. He brings entertainment, and I think it's very interesting. I did more of an interview with Bob, and I asked him, you know, what he thought about it. And, you know, he brought up the whole, he's going to bring the quote-unquote urban market, which was kind of funny. I said, well, he's going to bring the black market, right? And he was like, look, he started laughing.
He said, like, Bob Arum said, many men.
Yeah, I was like, look, I call it the urban market, you know? And I was like, all right, I guess we're urban. You know, and he brought up the Latin market, which is actually my market. But I thought, you know, what he said, somebody's just blowing up my Facebook. Hang on.
Focus, Gabriel. Focus.
Yeah. I just turned it off because the sound is all locked into my headphones. The thing with 50, and this is what I asked Bob. I said, when do you think he's going to do? Do you think he's going to end up doing his own shows? And that's what I kept asking 50, and he just kind of like smiled and didn't say anything. But everybody was kind of yelling questions. I don't think he was like ducking or anything. I just think he was done interviewing because people took forever, 10-minute interviews. It was ridiculous. But yeah. I thought Raheem was very, very good. What Bob said was, well, of course he will. Sooner or later, he's going to learn how to promote. I mean, today is his first media day. I think he learned, don't do 10-minute interviews with each reporter. Do two or three, get the guy out, move to the next guy. And you cover more ground that way. So he's just learning. I'm not sure if he's in it for the long haul or not. Before, when he was with just Floyd, I thought, okay, at some point, this is just like a vanity project. But I think either he's going to end up promoting his own show, or he's going to end up more of a manager, which is really what he is at this point. You know, he's calling himself promoter, and it's a co-promotion. He's going to do the ring walk for Gamboa and a new song and everything and a concert. However,
yeah, it just seems like he's a figurehead. He's not really. That's what I got out of it. I don't know.
But how is that any different than Luda Bella or Gary Shaw? They do their own shows. But a lot of times you see their guys on another card.
Well, he builded Sergio, you know, he builded Jermaine Taylor, of course, without Heyman's presence, you know, but
Jermaine Taylor was an Al Heyman guy. He got all his TV dates that way. And Sergio came to Lou. I thought Lou did a great job, of moving him. But Sergio was 34 when he showed up. He'd been built.
Rodriguez, you know, Lou's got some guys.
No, Lou puts on shows, Broadway boxing. In no way am I saying, he doesn't promote. Yeah. He does promote at a different level than Bob, but still. I think 50 right now, I think it's just too early to tell, you know? I kind of want to give him the benefit of the doubt. Like I said, I loved the energy he brought to the room, how positive he was, and it was interesting. You could see why he's successful. Because he was doing interviews like it was Erica Montoya, no relation, but you know, he spoke in Spanish with her. And then, because he said he doesn't want he's tired of the language barrier between him and Gamboa, which I thought was very, very cool. So he's learning Spanish for his guy. Yeah. But while he was doing the interview, he kept looking up and making eye contact with me. and eye contact with the videographer that was standing next to me. He talked to everybody, and he made a connection with everybody, and he made sure. Even when I was kind of hovering at the end, and he was signing autographs, and I just privately was like, you know, how is every day like this for you? And he was like, yeah, pretty much. And he was just a real dude. He was really – I was very surprised by how down-to-earth, how super cool he was the whole time. To me, I don't know where he's going, but
yeah.
I'm glad
thinking,
that he's with us.
I was just thinking that, like, you know how Mayweather promotions really isn't a promotion. It's just really Mayweather saying he has a promotion. I think, like, SMS is really just 50 saying, oh, yeah, I'm promoting the Top Rank, really runs a fucking show. You know what I mean? Like,
he actually has promoter's licenses in two states, and Floyd – you know, he doesn't
have anything, yeah.
And any, I mean, shit, Filthy Rich Records hasn't even released a record yet.
That's true.
I mean, I think that's the difference, you know.
Do you think 50 is, will we see Andre Durell on like a Golden Boy card, or will it just be strictly Top Rank? You know what I mean? Like, is he willing to work with other guys, or is he just going to like follow Bob's lead, basically?
I think that's a good question, you know.
That is a really good question. I don't know.
Sure.
I think, like you said, he's a businessman. I don't see him
burning a bridge,
which I think some folks already feel that he's kind of already done. But I think if he interlocks himself with Top Rank, he's locking himself with one of the best promotional companies out there.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He'll be learning, you know, from the best. And but I don't see this guy cutting his vein. You know, I think he's gonna treat his management and promotional ways, the way he treats his you know, hip-hop career, which is you got to start beef to make some noise, but then you settle it, and then you move on to the next project, you know. So that's what I kind of see with 50, you know, is trying to do. Mike, I'm going to put you on hold, brother, because we got to patch in our next guest here on Leaving the Ring, brother. Thanks for calling in, man. Some great questions.
Have a good night.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it. You too.
Fight fans, you want to call in? You absolutely can. 347-215-7598. Let's get my boy Henry Ramirez. What's up? The trainer of Chris the Nightmare and Josecito Lopez and a lot of other good fighters. What's cracking, brother? How you doing, man?
What's going on, guys? How you guys doing?
Doing good.
Great. Thanks for calling in, man.
No problem, man. I overheard you guys talk about the whole 50 Cent thing and you know, I mean, hey, a name like 50, I think, you know, I think creates some interest, you know, added interest to the sport of boxing, you know.
In the urban market, as Bob Arum
likes
to call it?
Absolutely. Absolutely, no. I mean, the urban market is, to be honest, is where it's lagging, you know what I mean?
Right.
Everywhere else,
you know, it
seems to be prospering.
That and Bob actually straight up said it. He's like, the white youth market is kind of dead in boxing. And we're, you know, because UFC really has that market cornered. And so he's trying to work with, like, you know, Trevor McCombie and Michael Zuski, who's, I think, going to be end up being a draw up in Montreal or up in Canada.
Yeah. Is MMA still around? I haven't heard nothing about it lately.
MMA? I don't think it is anymore. I think they ended it.
Not a fan at all.
You know, I actually have heard a couple of things about it. I heard a guy say this week that 90%, in his estimation, of UFC fighters, and this was a UFC fighter, he said that 90% are on steroids.
Oh, yeah, steroids, yeah.
Or PEDs. Yeah.
Let me tell you guys, out here in Riverside, you know, they creep. The wannabe MMA guys, all the fucking wannabes, they come out in packs. There'll be 10 or 20 of them together somewhere wearing their tap-out shirts or, you know, guys have been training a fucking month talking about turning pro. You know, real motherfuckers, like my guys, they don't be wearing Everlast T-shirts or, oh, I'm a pro fighter. Man, nobody wears that bullshit. You know, they get seen through TV, real notoriety. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
There's so many wannabes out here.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just, the only time I wear fight gear is, you know, when my broke ass is cold and I, you know, I've got like a free sweatshirt that somebody gave me. That's about it.
Absolutely.
You know, I don't walk around going, you know, I'm a boxing writer. You know, it's like,
right?
It just doesn't make any sense.
Right.
You get it a lot out there in Riverside?
Oh, there's so many wannabes out here. It's not even funny.
Oh, man, you got to come out to the Bay.
but you know, I mean, you know, we get a lot of love though too, man. Especially with, you know, with Josecito coming up also, it's been great because I get recognized even more, not just because of Chris, but because of Josecito also, you know what I mean? I mean, literally, I'll be like in Stater Brothers or, you know, some guy 2 weeks ago paid for my meal at a restaurant. I didn't even know. It was my daughter's birthday, and I took her and her best friend out to dinner. And he was talking to me in the waiting area and paid for my entire bill, like $108. And I didn't get a jump. Thank
that.
You. The manager came out. The manager came out. I was like, oh, the gentleman you were talking to in front paid for your entire bill. And I was like, well, where's he at? They're like, oh, he left a while ago, but he wanted to make sure we paid for your bill. And I was like, damn, I didn't get to say thank you. And then the manager said, oh, he just said he's a big fan of your fighters. And I was like, damn. You know, it was pretty humbling. It was a great gesture, you know.
Yeah.
Do you guys get packs of strength and conditioning coaches banding together in tap out shirts walking around in Riverside?
No, we don't
milkshakes at you
that.
Guys?
No, we don't get it. What happened with that game? I read that and I was like, I started reading. I was like, oh shit, what's going on? And I was like, holy shit. You know, I've never really,
hey,
I've never actually
all,
met Alex Ariza. I've never met the man. But I do know he's going to be working with Mikey Garcia. And, you know, Mikey Garcia.
No, he's not, actually.
Huh?
This is a great mystery. He trains at your gym. Okay.
Right. Mikey Garcia trains at our gym, you know?
Right.
What I'm told, though, is that Alex is no longer going to be the strength coach. Are you hearing
that? Okay.
I heard that the next night. I was told that by Cameron Duncan, Mikey's manager. He was like, no. That's not happening. So,
Like I said, I don't know the guy. He never met him. You know, he appears to be, you know, kind of controversial. But, you know, if I was to meet him, I'd say, hey, how you doing? You know, I don't have any personal experience. I don't know the man. I just only know what I read. But, no, I was a little surprised when I heard, to be honest, that he was going to be working with Mikey because they're real low-key. You know, Mr. Garcia, Eduardo, big G, and Mikey, they're real low-key, you know, just you know, go about their business, you know. So I was actually a little surprised.
Yeah, that they would add something like that. It seemed like if it's not broke, don't fix it. He seems like he's... You know,
right.
Mikey's on a nice path and doing really well. You know, I wasn't sure. I just checked with the manager. I think that's, you know, this story really kind of shows, like, when you're just a videographer and you don't have the number of the manager of the fighter, you shouldn't do an interview with just the trainer and then the strength coach and go, this story's true. It actually shows there's a reason why you call three sources as opposed to just two sources.
I guess if you were to hear from Mikey and Robert, those are pretty good sources, you know.
That's true.
Hey, like we said, we're looking forward to, you know, I've got my own fights coming up. You know, I've got Jonathan Arellano on a very tough task pick. We're fighting Jesse Magdaleno in Vegas, and then I turn right back around, and I got, you know, I think I'm going to come home and then fly out Saturday morning because there may be a press conference with Ward and Pavlik and Ariola and Severn in Vegas the morning of the Pacquiao-Marquez fight. It's not confirmed, but it looks like there will be some sort of press over there.
They usually do that. They usually kind of combine them, like, you know,
and Bob. You know, I mean,
that.
We're not stepping on Bob's toes because Bob's involved, so it makes sense, you know.
Right.
Traditionally, that's what they do. Either that or Floyd makes some sort of announcement to steal Manny's thunder.
Right. But at least, you know, like I said,
which makes me wonder what he's going to do next. What's the new thing he's going to try? You know.
Right. What do you guys think of the Guerrero-Verdo fight?
I thought it was great. I thought it was great, man. I thought that, you know, Robert kind of proved to us that he's a 147-pound fighter. I even had some fight fans hitting me up on Gmail asking, hey, would you want to see Josecito Lopez and Robert Guerrero go at it? You know, and I was man, that's an interesting fight.
It'd be great,
yeah.
But I know Robert, he's thinking Mayweather. He's thinking Mayweather. And, you know, I mean, I don't think beating Berto off a 14-month layoff gets you a Mayweather fight, but, hey, if it happens, it happens. Credit to him. I mean, I give the man all the credit in the world, man. He backed up Berto at will. Just want. I mean, it reminded me so much of the Victor fight.
Yeah.
It reminded me of a lot because Victor was putting his head in Berto's chest and just backing him up, and it was great, you know. But you know, I got to say one thing, too. Robert's got a hell of a chin, man, because Berto did catch him with some nice uppercuts and some big shots and never fucking buzzed him, you know.
Nope. And I got to give it to Robert. I got to give it to Robert, too, because he ripped the page from Bob Arum. We were talking about Bob Arum a little earlier of how he would mention his fighter with another fighter, but really not, you know, just to kind of make that fighter seem like they're in that same category, that elite. Robert's done that. He did the exact same thing. He kept putting his name with Floyd. So now everybody wants to – now everybody's talking about that fight. I don't really hear a lot of folks saying –
He's got a much stronger case now than he did six or 9 months ago when he was asking for it, you know?
Absolutely. Imagine if he didn't say anything 6 months ago and he just started saying it now. People would be like, no, you're not ready. Now it's like they got tired of it. They're like, well, you know what? This guy's beaten the horse to death.
Right.
Give it to him now.
Right. You know, and I don't know. There's so many other fights he could be in, but like I said, hey, everybody wants the opportunity at the big dog, and hey, why not? You know, if he gets the shot at Mayweather, God bless him, man. You know, he deserves the payday. You know, it's a big, huge one at that. And you know, do I think he beats Mayweather? No, absolutely not. But you know, I know one thing: he's definitely going to give it his all. And he's not going to have a mental breakdown like Victor did. You know what I mean? He'll definitely be there.
That's the thing.
Hold on. This is off the subject here, but I'm just reading. This guy, Zachary Sabe, he wants me to ask Gabriel. Gabriel, you've tried to attack a 22-year-old that looks like a 12-year-old rider. Now you try to go after a strength and conditioning coach. Should we make an announcement that all boxing trainers should hide their water boys from you now?
Hey, I was there during the Ortega incident. I walked into the bar, and I didn't know what I was walking into. I just, hey, what's up, guys? Next thing you know, I actually see a verbal exchange. I'm like, what the hell's going on here? And then Gabe slapped him.
You can say it. Now, let me ask you this, Henry. Since you were there, you know, and I got kind of vilified as picking on Mark Ortega. Was he not the one that told you about it and was in there bragging?
Oh, yeah, I had no clue. Because, look, I got turned away from a fucking club where everybody in Riverside was at because I couldn't find my passport. I was showing the security guard everything. So I said, oh, fuck it. I'm going to go back to drink with the boxing people at the MGM. I go back over there, and I think it was the Rouge. What bar was it? Rouge?
Rouge, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So I walk in, Centrifuge, yeah, whatever. I walk in. I see Gabe and I see Mark and I see Alex Caponola and I'm chopping it up and then I can hear these two talking about fighting the day of the Rio Salvador fight. I'm like, are you guys serious? And they're like, yeah, we're gonna box. And you know, Mark said something, you know, sounded pretty confident. And Gabe's like, oh, you fucking sounded real confident, aren't you, little bitch, or something like that. So you know me, I try to play the promoter. I get in between them, holding each one's hand up, can we get a face off? And then Gabe reaches across and slaps him. my Don King moment. I was trying to hold their hands up and get my Don King moment. You know, like, yeah, man. I wonder if he was by height.
Going all gangster and everything. Henry, just see what happens. We take him to Riverside a few times, and now he's all choloed out.
I know, man. I couldn't believe it. I was like, Gabe, oh, man, I really could not. I was dying, dude. I was dying laughing to myself.
That's what I think. At the end of the day, he fights professionalism as the reason why he can't fight, even though he covers boxing.
Yeah.
I was like, damn, writers have real beef. I mean, I couldn't believe it, man.
Let me ask you, let's get back to some fighting. You guys have lost. Areola fought five times last year. He's fought three times this year. Are you happy with the amount of times? You're going to get your fourth in. Are you good with – he looked in great shape when we went and saw him. Are you happy with the way things have progressed?
No, look, guys, after the loss to Automec, you know, obviously there was a rebuilding phase and – you know, we took a lot of heat for not facing, I guess, what people deemed were, you know, top 10, top 15 caliber guys. But, you know, the thing that I have to explain to people, and you guys know, there's an economic side to this. You know, who were we going to get on ESPN for $20,000? You're not going to get anybody of a Stavern, a Automec, whoever, anybody in the top 10 or 15, you know. That fight was more like journeyman type guys, you know. Maggie Aguilera, Kendrick Relaford, you know, just guys to work on his conditioning and work on some things. Let me correct you. He fought five times in 11. and only once in 2012. Our only fight was the Eric Molina fight in February in Corpus
Christi. I'm looking
at. He was supposed to fight June 23rd. He was supposed to fight Mike Molo under the Josecito and Victor Ortiz fight. We pulled him out because of an elbow injury.
I was looking at Ariano's record.
Yeah.
He fought three times. Ariel is right next to him. You're right. Yeah, one time.
This fight was supposed to be in December in Venezuela or whatever the hell. But, you know, I mean, hey, look, I'm excited about it being at the Gatlin Center. I'm even more excited about being back on HBO, you know. It's taken us almost 3 years to get back after the loss to Automic. And somehow, Seth Mitchell's, supposedly, I heard his rematch gets approved to get back on HBO after he got splattered, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is what it is. I mean, it doesn't look like he sat on the shelf all year. He's in that same kind of shape right now. Chris just looks like a switch is flipped with him, and he's maintaining consistency. And I mean, he came in, it wasn't even his day to really, you know, he came in and just worked his ass off like just another fighter. And that really impressed me, you know, that he was
right.
You can see the game have changed for him. I mean, all the way, you know, and I'm really interested in seeing him get back into the ring and just put the work in the ring that he's been, I wouldn't even say struggling. He doesn't look like he struggled with it. It looks like he just finally, like you just mentioned, the switch went on and it stayed on. It hasn't went on.
Yeah, well, not only that, guys. You know, this is his opportunity to let, you know, the American public and the American fight fans know that there is an American heavyweight to be reckoned with. And it's Chris Ariola. It's not Seth Mitchell. Not, you know, anybody else. It's Chris Ariola. He's the one who's got to create the interest, create the buzz, you know, go out there and perform the way we know he can and come in the shape that people want to see, you know, so they can start believing in him again, you know.
Absolutely.
He's got to win that trust back, and I think people will be real impressed.
You know, I mean, and, you know, what better way with, you know, I know people were high on Seth Mitchell. To me, he seems like a nice guy. I never understood. I never got it. I just never bought in. You know, never. I
even tweeted to you, I still want to see Chris and him go at it. I don't know why.
It would be one round fight, brother.
It would be exciting. It would be fun.
For about a minute. Yeah, I think
it would be fun, though. It's almost...
Do you think the difference is that... Somebody else said this, that it was, I forget who it was, but he started at 25, and there are things that Chris learned being a junior middleweight most of his career, and then growing into heavyweight, that a guy that just starts at heavyweight is never going to learn.
You know,
would you agree?
I think fighters who have put in the years should be fucking offended that a guy that thinks they can come to 24, 25 and get to a level of prominence in the sport. That'd be like a guy in football or a boxer quitting at 25, say, oh, fuck it, I want to go to the NBA or I want to go to the NFL. Not going to happen.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, the thing is, boxing, you can maneuver certain guys all the way to a certain level, and then reality sets in, everybody's got to fight eventually, you know? You know, you can play the charade game for so long. And I think that's what we've seen. You know, we've seen a guy, a big, strong guy, Seth Mitchell. By all intents and purposes, he works hard. But he was knocked out by a cruiserweight, who wasn't a big puncher, a cruiserweight,
and
you
also
know?
Who I think takes your feelings in being offended that there's a football guy stepping in the ring and people are picking him to knock me out. And in reality,
right,
I've been doing it since I was 9 years old, and I'm the boxer and puncher in this fight, and we saw that and stuff. So yeah,
so
I agree with you.
We'll see where it goes. I know. You know, I think they're going to have the rematch with Jonathan Banks and Seth Mitchell. Chris has got a real challenge in front of him with Berman Stavern. I've seen Stavern since 05. I've seen this guy. I've seen him in person on the Judah Belvedere card. I've seen him on the Judah Mayweather card. You know, I knew about this guy 7 years ago, you know. So I had always knew there was potentially a fight that him and Chris would have, and here we are, you know.
Yeah, I think, you know, we were talking about that. Like, Al kind of gets guys into dates a little faster. And Chris kind of got to that two-fight-a-year process. But then you guys went last year. I was really impressed by what he did. He was like, look, I just want to fucking fight. Just get me as many fights as I can. And then this year, yeah, it's been not as active, obviously, but I think what happened last year carried over into the gym for him this year, and now he's hungry.
Absolutely. Like, you know, the thing is, you know, Chris doesn't blow up to 280, 290 between fights anymore. He really walks around about 245 or 250, you know, and so, you know, 7-8 week camp, 10 to 15 pounds, you know, comes off like nothing.
Right. Yeah, that's evident. We saw it last time we were out there when Josecito was training. He walked through that door. We were just like, whoa, you know?
Yep.
And, but yeah, absolutely. Hey, Henry, man, thanks, brother, for calling in, brother. It was great having you on,
yeah,
like always.
No problem, guys. You know, like I said, I'm working with quite a few guys now, but there's one in particular I want to point out. A kid named Joshua Connolly. Remember the name, guys. He's 4-0 with four knockouts, had about 90, 95 amateur fights. Came in second and third in a few of the U.S. Nationals in 09, 010. Kind of went into hiding for a year, but I've turned him pro. He's 4-0. Thompson Boxing is going to sign him. This guy is something to see, man. He's going to be something special, let me tell you. And if you guys know me, I don't say that about anybody. This kid is going to be something.
No, yeah.
Well, except for Mark Ortega. I think you were big on him in his fighting career. I'm not sure.
Man, I appreciate it. I'll talk to you guys. I'm glad, Gabe, you were able to escape a BJ yesterday.
You and me both. My mother was very happy.
All right, guys. Be good.
All right.
Take care.
Yeah. Bye. Keeping it real. I'm glad you escaped.
One of our favorite trainers that calls in and chops it up here with us on Leaving Me. We always go out there to Riverside to hang out with him. Real quick, trainers, lock the doors for your water boys. For Gabriel right now. I guess that's the next guy on the list that some fans are thinking that Gabriel's going to go after. That was great.
It's just too funny.
Let's get on with you guys here on Leaving the Ring. If you missed the early part of the show, don't worry about it. It will replay as soon as I fix it on the web.
What the hell?
But let's get with that fight schedule here.
Yep. And go. Let's go Friday night on Telemundo at Foro Polanco in Mexico City, Mexico. Antonio Pitalua, 53-6-1 versus Pablo Munguia.
Where is he?
15-3. You know, I couldn't tell you, Dave. Pitalua is. Obviously, he's going to be the favorite. He's the guy. I mean, he's 42 years old. He's got the big record. So, but at the same time, you know, Munguia is kind of like extraordinarily ordinary, in my opinion. He's got a punch to him. He's got some early losses. Most recently, about in 2011, he lost. It just seems to me like Pitalua is the guy that they're favoring. But we'll see. You know, anything can happen. It is boxing, after all.
Right.
Let's move to the big night, Saturday night, where all the big fights are happening. At the Madison Square Garden in New York City, New York, Showtime will present Miguel Cotto, 37-3, versus Austin Trout, 25-0. In support there, Danny Jacobs versus Chris Kirkpatrick. Jason Velez takes on Salvador Sanchez. And Jorge Melendez, speaking of where have they been, takes on Cesar Bazan.
Bazan, you know what? Where has he been? He should have stayed at where he's been at, to tell you the truth.
I've taken Trout by decision. I know I'm crazy, but that's what I'm rolling.
You know what? I don't think so. I think even when the fight was announced, I told you I liked this fight. I even told you, I don't know if we talked about it on the show, but I know that we definitely talked about it off the air. And I said, I'm really surprised that Cotto took this fight. This is a fight that he could really lose to a really tough, solid contender that can potentially shine to be a champion, even though he has the bout, and that's what Cotto's after. I'm going to go with you on it, man. I say Trout, too. I think Trout beats him to decision. I think that Trout has the size, definitely has the size. And here's the thing, is that, like, speaking with other fight fans, and they've said, well, you know, Cotto's been successful with bigger, taller guys. I said, but let's name the two big, taller guys that he's beaten in the past. Antonio Margarito, who was really slow and not even himself anymore and had a bad eye. He was able to outbox him, stay away from him, and tag a much smaller moving Antonio Margarito. Now, The second guy was Yuri Foreman, who didn't have any power and really fought the wrong game plan. He was trying to run from the guy rather than try to stand his ground and really show that he was the much bigger man. And he was he had a leg injury. We saw the whole works there. Trout's a different beast. He doesn't mirror any of those two guys we just mentioned right now. He's got really good, tremendous boxing skills. Like I said, he doesn't have special effects, but he definitely has something that's workable. And when you have something that's solid and workable and you have a guy that knows his abilities, he's dangerous. He's really dangerous. And I'm going to tell you what, Miguel Cotto had Floyd Mayweather thinking. Austin Trout's going to have Miguel Cotto thinking Saturday night.
I agree. I think he might. We'll see. I mean, you know, Pedro Diaz has done a hell of a job with Cotto, and I thought they had a wonderful game plan for Floyd Mayweather. I was so proud of them for the way they really molded him into what he needed to be as best he could to take on Floyd. And I expect him to be just as prepared this time around. I think it's going to be a very good fight. I think people that are expecting something to be a little bit boring and they don't know who Trout is and he's a pure boxer, blah, blah, I think they're in for a treat. Danny should knock this guy out or at least win by decision. I think it would be better for him if he went rounds and won by decision. He needs to get that rust off. You know, you get that initial win like Angulo did, that quick knockout. I got to tell you, the guy that he beat, Danny, that Danny beat in the last fight, somebody was telling me about him sparring. He was sparring at Fortune Gym coming into the fight. And one of the guys he sparred with is a guy I spar with. And the guy said, "You hit me more than he did," which is, doesn't, you know, I'm not very good. And that's kind of spoke, when you saw that guy fight and he got iced, my friend, the sparring guy, his theory was that this guy may not even really be all that. Like, he may not, he kind of looks like he can fight, but he can't really fight.
Right.
And sure enough, when we got into the fight, like, you saw him kind of move around like a boxer and then he got hit and he just went down like a ton of bricks. I expect Fitzpatrick to be, his record doesn't look entirely manufactured at all. It looks decent. He's just not that next tier. So I think Danny will get extended as well. He should.
Absolutely. You know, here's a question out of our Gmail account. Miguel Zezepa asking, how long do we expect Danny Jacobs to take on fights that are going to pad his record? And when do we expect him to step up? Is it late in 2013 or the beginning of 2014? And I'm just cutting it short real quick. It is a guy wrote me two paragraphs here. But just to sum it up, that's what he's asking. You know what? I don't have a problem with him finishing out the year, which is close to being the end, and to kind of drag into the next year. Let's be reminded here, this is a guy that fought for his life, the biggest fight ever in his life. But I would go for the beginning of 2014 to see him really step it up. Gabriel, I don't know about yourself. I wouldn't be truly upset and expecting a whole lot from a guy that went through a whole lot to make sure that he was here with us.
That's a good question. I'm not really sure. And Danny and I haven't quite connected since his comeback. You know, we did that interview here on the radio, and then we haven't really spoken since. I need to reconnect with Dan to really answer that question. I think it depends on how he feels. I mean, if this fight goes a little bit of rounds and it was meant to, then we'll see. You know, but if it's a quick blowout, then I would say, you know, it's going to be part, at least towards the middle of next year. Maybe late next year they start to really step it up. But I don't think 2014. I think next year, if they're fighting him at this pace, within 3-4 fights they should be making a move. And I wouldn't be surprised if it ultimately becomes, depending on how his progress is, maybe a Quillen fight on an all-Brooklyn match. You know, Danny's from Brownsville, and they do the Barclays Center there, and Peter has roots in New York. That would be an interesting fight. But that would be. We'll see. Continuing down at the Odyssey Arena in Belfast, Northern Ireland, Tyson Fury, 19-0 versus Kevin Johnson. I think this is a nice matchup for Fury. He's going to have to deal with the boxing of Johnson, deal with that jab. KJ's pretty much good for the jab, not much else. Some movement. Chris Eubank Jr., 7-0 versus Matt Haney, 9-4-2. That should be interesting. At the Berg, Walter Costello in Dusseldorf, Germany. Ruslan Chagayev, 32-1 versus Mike Perez, 18-0. And at the Mountaineer Casino, this won't be on TV, in Chester, West Virginia, Paul Spadafora continues his undefeated campaign, 46-0-1 versus Solomon Egberimi. egg bury me. 22, 3,
egg me?
One. Yeah, I was trying to find a joke in there, but I just couldn't. And that is your weekend fight schedule.
Well, there you go, fight fans. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of Leaving the Ring. Apologize for not being on air Thursday. Made a few of you guys do some chores, some other things. Made a lot of guys hang out with the families and the wives and girlfriends. But, hey, we'll be back every Thursday, 5 o'clock, same time, Pacific time, 5, Eastern time, 8 o'clock here on Leaving the Ring. We're gonna fix that website for you guys so you make sure you go back if you missed the two other hours of Leaving the Ring. Don't worry about it. You'll be able to tune in and listen to it on the replay. Again, like always, a lot of fun. I wish everybody the best. Don't drink and drive. Be safe. Hang out with the family and enjoy the fights. Gabriel?
Dude, as always, fun. And you know, we didn't have to shake any ring rust this week. It was kind of nice. We took a little break, came right back. I feel, you know, nice and fresh and had a lot of things to talk about. We didn't really get into the Tom Hauser stuff. But, you know, we've covered drug testing and PEDs in the sport. We covered it a little bit tonight. More thoroughly than anybody else out there. I feel very confident saying that.
I was going to say that. I mean, we've covered it. We've talked about it. We've, you know, from, I don't put 2008, 2009.
And so I guess the point is, it's time for everybody else to start stepping up and covering.
Yeah, to beat that dead horse.
Please, yeah. You know, yeah.
In the words of Kevin Ioli, beat that dead horse. Anyways, I'm your host, Dave Duane. It's my partner, Gabriel Montoya, and the man behind the switchboard, our producer, Mr. David Chan, who makes things always possible for us to be here live every Thursday at 5 o'clock Pacific, 8 o'clock Eastern. Till next Thursday, everybody enjoy this Saturday fights, and be sure to tune in every Thursday night, like I said, here on Leaving the Ring Radio.
Dave, as always, great time, and fans, peace.